Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Loy Ball, and you're on the net live.
Rhyme Alarm, you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Ballin, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Karch Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
Feeling it over there, Geeter. Yo! The Net Live, 14th of February. Valentine's Day, ladies and gentlemen.
That's why Jay Roche is wearing a pink shirt. Good call. That's right. Get in the mood.
Feeling the flow of the holiday. Jay Roche.
Huge crowd today.
Chris McGee.
Feeling
Kevin
good.
Barnett in studio. Reed Pretty, live from Russia.
What up?
It's the end of Valentine's Day over there. Hopefully he's treated his wife right and all things are okay.
It's been a good day.
Just want to make sure. Hey, we got a great show planned for you here today. Huge stuff. Misty May Traynor. That's the headline. Has to be. Coming on the show.
No offense to all other guests.
That's right. Anyone else is on the program, sorry, your name is not Misty May. You are
Traynor.
Not M squared. Misty May is going to be on here. We have a lot of topics to talk about with her, her future, what she's doing this year, how her foot is.
Her book.
Her new book. Great book. Misty, Digging Deep in Volleyball and Life. Got a couple of copies sitting right here on the desk.
If she never met Matt Traynor, would it maybe be Jeremy Roche?
Misty May Roche. Ooh, I like that. Misty May Roche.
I'm going to get in trouble for that one.
But hey, we
Sugar,
also...
Sugar Ray is confident. You don't have to.
True.
Very true.
We also have John Tawa. Tawa? John Tawa.
John Tawa.
Tawa?
Yeah. PrepVolleyball.com.
And Ojan. Can't say his last name.
Ojan. Don't worry about it. Ojan's like Kobe. Just needs one name.
Ojan,
he's
our junior's
like
insider. He's going to come on. Talk about the upcoming weekend, Vegas, big tournament. You're
going to
be there,
Peter. There's actually three big tournaments going on this year at this time. One in Omaha. Sports Performance has one. And then Vegas. So this is like the big weekend where all the college coaches are going out. Eric Sullivan will be recruiting first time for
in
Texas
burnt
in
orange.
Burnt Orange. I think he's going to Omaha, his old stomping grounds. So that'll be interesting. And, you know, people just flock. You know, Vegas is the big one, and then Omaha and Sports Performance. So big, huge weekend for juniors club volleyball.
AVCA College Volleyball Weekly coming up also. Pepperdine, baby. Pepperdine.
I believe,
down number one SC.
I believe the upset alert last week was Northridge against Long Beach State. I believe Sondheimer said that. Northridge ended up winning 17-15, I believe, in the fifth or 15-13.
We're going to have Sondheimer. We're going to have Jay Hossick, Rob Aspero, all three of our correspondents.
You know, this morning I'm on the MPSF website, and I'm looking for updates on men's volleyball. There's nothing from this past week. It's last week's scores.
So you're feeling my pain.
Yeah. Like, for the first time, I felt like Kevin Barnett.
Did you go on a rant?
It was awkward and weird. I started screaming at the kids and everybody. But,
you are Kevin Barnett.
If I had a dog and a cat, I'd be yelling at them. But I was just ranting in my living room at like 7 a.m. by myself.
If you're listening to this show, podcast or live, and right now you're screaming that you guys are missing a whole topic, we have not missed it. We heard something happened with Hugh McCutchen this past week. I think he took a job somewhere. And I think we predicted it on this show.
We did. I know. For a fact, I know Reed gives you all the credit, but I definitely predicted this. I saw it coming, talked about it in December on this show. I want you to come on this show. When is that happening?
I hope next week.
I hope next week, too.
Believe me, we have been all over him in trying to get him here. We have been all over Hugh, and I guess things aren't 100% yet.
Gotcha.
Enough for people.
We'll get him. He's been a friend of the show for a long time. We've had him on a half dozen times. He's our best guest. And
we knew this would get you riled up, bud.
Yeah. You know, the story's still pending. I think there's a lot of speculation out there. There's lots of questions, and I know we're going to get into all of them here. But when the story's fulfilled, he's coming on for sure.
The pending thing is, Reed, we have you on the show to answer phones, of course, but also for your connection to Hugh McCutchen.
You won a gold medal together, Reed.
And why isn't he on our show today?
First time I've ever yelled at Reed.
Blaming you.
I feel like Barnett today.
You know, it would just be an incomplete story. I mean, we all know that he's going to it's imminent that he will be the head coach at Minnesota. I think there's some things pending. And it's better for us just to wait it out. Let's wait it out until all the information's out there.
Speaking of Eminem, big comeback last night.
No Grammys?
He was on fire last night.
Subtle.
Jeremy worked the Grammys last night, didn't
no
he?
No one flew out of the balcony on him or had a crummy little dog ask him questions?
No.
I want to know when we get invites to
Jeremy's party.
To Jay Roche's parties. I mean.
Never.
That sounded like a good time last
night.
Peter
doesn't even get invited.
No.
Misty May gets invited.
Only reason I'm invited is because I was working. It's not like they would have sent me an invite anyways. I don't know who follows Misty May Trainer on Twitter, but it is fantastic that she thinks Jeremy and I are the only ones on this show.
I laughed immediately when I saw that tweet. And
Jeremy's been
right
involved
away.
For 4 weeks, and Misty's acting like it's his show.
Welcome to the Net Live with DJ Roche, Geeter, and some other people.
It's a whole different demographic, right? You know, people who paint their toenails and good stuff.
I like that. Subtle shot. God, Reed is chippy today, and I like it.
Start a program, you do your best, and then some guy walks in, comes to a couple of programs, and just takes over. It's not cool.
Are you referring to me, who's been in the seat now for 9 months, and I haven't left, and I'm still not on the beginning of the show?
Well, I think it was you who said, let's bring on Roche, and now you, together, are trying to be the Egyptian army and take over
that
the
government.
That
was our master plan. Let's get Misty on and have her tweet just about the two of us.
Well, we all know that she has more power than any of us in the social media network, so... she does have the power to oust Kevin and I from this show.
Yeah, she comes on today and says, you guys are out. I'll only talk to Geeter and Jeremy. Is that going to be okay?
We're just going to have to do it, I guess.
Is Valentine's Day a big deal in your house, Reed? Because over here in my house, Valentine's Day, not such a big deal. Just
not a big deal. No, the wife, thankfully, it's not high on her radar. Our anniversary is in a month. So it's kind of like a precursor. But, you know, with the baby involved and no nanny or babysitter, it was a good day for us to connect. So
11 years ago, my wife and I started dating February 6th, 2000, right? That first Valentine's Day, 8 days into the relationship, club volleyball tournament in Vegas. I started it then, training her to know that I would be gone most Valentine's days, that I do not care about that tradition or whatever you want to call it, holiday. I think it's overrated. I loved it when I was in high school. I loved it when I was, you know, just getting to know a girl and I was trying to really land her. Okay? That's when I loved it. But once you're married, does it really matter?
No,
isn't Valentine's Day every day, Barney?
Shouldn't you be kind to your wife all the time?
All the time.
Treat her with respect and
that
adoration.
Being said, we are going to have a nice dinner tonight. And Millie's involved now, so, you know, it's a fun thing. Millie made me a card. I'm getting her something.
I think I'm going out with Max tonight, my younger son.
Younger son.
Yeah, Max and dad time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's an overrated holiday.
It's just an excuse for people to sell all kinds of red stuff and cards, and it's a manufactured deal, I think.
There are women right now listening to us just going, look at those four grumpy old men writing. Now, if our wives were in the room, I might sing a different tune.
I wouldn't.
She knows how I feel about it, but I would say, honey, yeah, obviously I want to do something with you, but
as long as you
she
at
knows
least,
it's overrated.
As long as you at least acknowledge it.
Absolutely. I don't think you need to go out and spend $500. That's all I'm saying. Card, something nice, bang.
Yeah, don't be paying like $95 for roses because tomorrow they're going to be $15.
I once, guys, 1997, received roses from a young lady, but kind of like someone else. They were fantastic roses. Is it wrong that I took those roses and gave them to the girl that I liked and looked like a king? Is that wrong?
Absolutely.
It is?
Yes.
There's my Valentine's Day story, Reed.
Nice.
Took flowers from one and gave them to the other. That was 1997. I was young. I was dumb. I was cocky.
You had no money.
No money. Yeah, I had some money. Swagger.
You could jump 40 inches.
Never. 27 tops. And you know what? I didn't think that was a big deal back then. Think about it now. That gal knew that. I don't know if she's a Net Live fan.
No. No.
She's living in Vegas with five kids, actually. I'm not sure, but I have to track her down, see what she's up to.
Well, the biggest news in volleyball this past week was, in fact, Hugh McCutchen, head coach of the women's national team, taking the job as head coach of the Minnesota women's team. How is he going to do this, you might ask? I think about Multiplicity and Michael Keaton. But that's the real question here. When is he going to move? Is he going to move this year, next year, after 2012? I think those are the only three options, essentially.
That's the reason why we don't know. They haven't made that decision yet, right? I mean, I've read everything about it.
I guess not.
I've gone on every blog. I've gone on every website, Minnesota's website. They're not saying the day.
They have an assistant coach who's been a head coach
Laura Bush,
times, who will be the assistant, or the head, pardon me.
The interim head coach.
Interim head. They've said that, but not for how long. My thought was, why didn't we have an hour-long program for this called Hugh McCutchen's Decision?
Yes, I'm taking my talents to the Golden Gophers.
To Minnesota.
I think, this is what I think, I don't know.
Okay.
I think he stays through London and then joins the University of Minnesota after.
That's the obvious.
Yeah, I mean, why would he not do that?
That's the obvious one for me. This is exactly what Hugh McCutchen set out to do. When he switched from men's to women's, even though he'd won a gold medal on the men's side, it doesn't mean anything to all these administrators, right? Oh, yeah. Coaching women's different. Hugh's theory, I love it, is that elite athletes are elite athletes. There are subtle differences, but not large-scale changes that need to be made to your system in order to coach women athletes. Still athletes. But he moved over to the women's side just to get that credibility to move into women's college eventually. That's the goal. That's the funny thing about this. The women's national team job is a stepping stone to a women's college job, not the other way around. Tells you a little bit about where that job ranks.
And Hugh McCutchen is now into this women's team 2 years or wherever we're at, and they've had success. We've seen huge improvements.
Yes.
This is a team that can make some noise in London, chance for a medal. I think Hugh sees it through. I think he's put in too much time. I think he's seen the success. And, I mean, he can write his own ticket. So the Minnesota job, obviously, great for him. I've read people say, why Minnesota? Well, that's where Wiz is from. Everyone knows what that family has been through. They now have a son. Her mom lives back there. I can see why they want to go back and be close to the family and be stable somewhere. He's been traveling now how long internationally? 8 years? Wasn't he assistant as well with you guys in 2003?
Correct. 8 years.
8 years internationally? That's a ton of travel away from the family. But now they're going to have a kid, maybe two kids.
They have one kid.
Perfect. Yeah, they have one. This is perfect for him. This is a great move.
No, this is
in the Big Ten Conference, out of this world right now. Russ Rose is in there. Kevin Hambly in Illinois strong. Rosen and Michigan strong. Purdue made it to the Elite Eight. That conference is arguably the best.
As soon as that job came up.
And now Cook's going to be there with Nebraska. Yeah. Now Nebraska's going to the Big Ten.
I hit him with it in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Standing there in the convention hall. Hugh, are you going to take the Minnesota job? Well, Barney, non-answer. But it makes absolute sense. Wiz Bachman, who is his wife, Wiz McCutchen, is from Minneapolis. Her family is a very prominent family there in Minneapolis, owns a variety of gardening centers, a whole chain of gardening centers. And they have a big, I guess, house on the hill, and then down the hill there's a couple of other houses. And on one property, a lot of the family members live. I think it's an attractive thing to go back there and be with family. And certainly anybody who's had kids knows, Geeter, you, me, Reed, that being around family is an important thing when you have kids. Just so they can babysit the thing so you can get the hell out again.
It's tough.
Other reason. No, it's a fantastic thing.
It's nice
thing
to have what we call a freebie. You have a free babysitter, it is lights out. And if it's family, man, even better.
And it's good for the kids to be around grandparents. But another discussion. So I think that everything fits together. All those pieces just came together for him. And that is an ideal situation, even though it's 2 years early. That's the only problem.
And he can win there. Mike Hebert, who recently retired in December, phenomenal job there. One of the great coaches in our sport, three Final Fours. He can win there. He can recruit. The Midwest is booming. He's a huge name. You know, I read somewhere people said, we have a kids today. They even know that Hugh's the coach. Let me tell you, the players that they're going to be going after, the players that Jared Elliott goes after, John Cook goes after, Jim McLaughlin goes after, Mick Haley, they know who the national team is. The elite players know what the national team is like in our country. And if they don't, they learn quickly, or their parents do. I mean, Hugh is a monster name, the biggest thing going in coaching. Him taking Minnesota, he'll win there. He'll be able to recruit there. He'll be in the Final Four in the first few years.
Are you just trying to get out ahead of him winning a national championship? You said you predicted it.
I'm not going to hand him a ring.
But
right,
you give
away.
Him a Final Four.
But I, you know, yeah, in the first few years, I think he'll get to the Final Four.
First few years, okay.
I mean, I think you're right, though, Geeter. That even if people don't know who he is, which, you know, in my opinion, he's the highest profile coach in the States right now. He has such a he's such a good people person. I mean, that's what he really brings. He brings this passion for, you know, the X's and O's, the technique of the game, you know, combined with an appreciation for individuality and personal relationships. And so even if they don't know him, he's going to win them over in a recruiting trip. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he was over here 2 weeks ago, as I mentioned last week, visiting Jordan Larson. And we had everybody over here at the house. And, you know, we're breaking down the arm swing here in the living room. And you know, everyone's loving it. And so, you know, whether or not they know him or not, he's going to be a hit and he's going to be very successful.
What goes on when you break down the arm swing in the middle of a living room with drinking going?
Cork versus pike.
You break a lot.
That's what it's all about. I used to be a huge piker, but Hugh started working with me in Vienna. And in fact, I hear that we might be having Jamie Morrison on the show here soon, who's doing a female version of the project in Vienna that we had, I don't know, maybe 7 years ago, where it was all Americans and an American coach. And that was with Hugh, and it started there. And Torque versus Pike, man.
Jamie Morrison on the show in 2 weeks. He's a an assistant coach guy for the national team, has been for the men and the women, and he is coaching a professional team in Austria.
And for the record, love the word pike. you've used it so many ways. Piking. It's awesome.
You bring
over the net and pike. Roof balls.
You bring up Jared Elliott.
Yes.
Note from one of our listeners, Jeff Twining. Said, so Hugh goes to Minnesota. Does Jared Elliott go to the national team and E. Sullivan becomes Texas head coach? Could happen, question mark. Let me answer this. No.
Can I answer too? No.
Jared Elliott, there's no reason to ever leave Texas, first of all. He shouldn't have the national team job. I don't understand. And E. Sullivan taking over Texas? No, I think E. Sullivan's more likely to end up in the international game. I think he's more likely to end up as the head coach of the women's national team or men's national team after a stint as a head coach somewhere in college. I think he's the one more likely to return.
Yeah, there's no question. I think that if Hugh were to leave, and when he leaves, I think Jim McLaughlin at Washington is an obvious candidate, and maybe John Cook from Nebraska. You think about two guys that have been in the game now, have had a lot of success, have the credentials. You know, McLaughlin, a part of USA Volleyball. I think Jimmy Mack at least is a candidate.
Maybe, but I don't know why you would. I mean, you're in a stable situation at a university where you could stay for 15 years, and we're going to dial Reed back here.
Mm-hmm.
You could stay for 15 years and have that job and have that notoriety and that kind of ease of life. Or you can go to the national team, which is presumably a four-year cycle at its max, so you have to have your contract renewed. And it's very volatile. There's a ton of travel, a lot of unknowns. And I just don't know that's a good job. I mean, the pay is mediocre compared to what most of these coaches get between their salary and camps.
But it's like Pete Carroll going to the NFL. Obviously, there's a lot of money involved there. But you know, maybe somewhere, isn't it for these guys, the pinnacle of our sport, national team, Olympics, chance to win gold? Does that play into it at all?
Yeah, but feeding your family long-term and having a stable position in a university where you're well-paid and well-funded is better, I think. With the national team, they've moved so many times. You don't know how they're going to do now. Very stable at the moment. USA Volleyball has done a great job in the last, I'd say, 8 years of really pushing the national team programs and their entire organization toward a more stable financial future. I think all that's positive, but I still think the international game is a huge unknown for most of these college coaches. They don't know the players. They don't know the styles of play. And anyone who thinks that you can step out of D1 college and go dominate internationally is a fool, both from a playing standpoint, from a coaching standpoint.
I agree.
So it's a huge, huge leap to make from a very comfortable place at a big-time university when you're talking about a Cook, McLaughlin, Elliott, to then go to the national team. I think you're sacrificing a lot to go to that job. I don't think it's an upgrade. It's not like going from college basketball to the NBA. That comes with some of its own. But I think it's more likely you see somebody who's an assistant at a big-time program or a head at a mid-level program take that job than it is one of the high-level guys. I think we've seen that the last couple of times they've needed a coach. They've struggled to find a coach with a situation where they would commit to the national team.
Is Reed now on now?
No, still okay. Efforting.
Now, Kevin, you know Hugh well. I remember asking you back in December if he got the job in Minnesota, would he finish out London? You said absolutely. Have you changed your mind on that stance?
No, I think he's going to. I think he has to. I think he absolutely has to. Not only for the players, but for himself. I think it's more for him and what he hoped to accomplish there. And hopefully they'll negotiate out the deal points as to when he'll arrive in Minnesota. It's going to be delicate. It's going to be a lot more for him to do. But the question becomes, okay, what if he did have to leave now? What if Minnesota said, if you want this job, you have to come now? What happens to the national team? Does Karch take over? Is Karch ready to take over? From everything I've heard, no.
Does Karch want to take over?
I don't know either,
and I think that would be a good question for Karch. I don't know what his goals are in coaching. I mean, he was rumored when the UCLA job came out. I don't think Karch would ever want to take a job as a head of a program, whether it be women's college or national team, until he knew he was ready. He wouldn't just take it because I'm Karch and I want to take it and see what I can do here. Karch is very meticulous in his planning. He's, you know, very prepared, and he would not want to go into a job without being 100% prepared. Agree, Jeremy?
100%. I mean, that's how he was when he played. And
I mean, he had questions about Jeremy's DJing with his kids. He, like, came up to the DJ booth and asked Jeremy 35 questions
had, like,
about
a,
DJing.
Had a list prepared.
Yeah, he had a list prepared. I mean, the guy, that's just how he is. That's how he rolls.
One of the most analytical human beings you'll ever meet. That's what everything I hear about Karch. I just don't think he's ready for that job. Will he be? Eventually. I think the real question for me is, in 2 years, which program does he take over?
Yeah.
Men's or women's? International.
I can see after his first Olympics, 2012, as an assistant, him ready to take over one, if that's what he wanted.
And I think that's the ideal thing when you look at what Hugh's path was.
Yeah.
He was an assistant for 2 years, 03. You know, 03, 04, on through the Olympics, and then he got the head job. And I think that's important. When you have Allen Knipp come to the game, he doesn't know the players.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Reed that. How important is it for a head coach to have some assistant coaching experience at the Olympic Games, you know, that beast that is the Olympics, actually going there, going through the schedule and learning the planning? I mean, there's a lot that goes in the Olympic Games. It's not just show up and play.
Yeah, there's no doubt that being an assistant, being familiar with the players and, the scouting, the different players overseas, not just guys on your team, but the guys you're playing against, definitely gets you a step forward. And not having that, you know, you got to work that much harder. I think it's made Allen's transition that much more difficult, not having a ton of exposure to the team.
Yeah, we've said that here on the show before, that Allen's been kind of behind the eight ball, and we really haven't seen what he can do as a coach because of the fact that he came on so late and had no knowledge of the international game. And this was somebody that said, oh, he's played juniors or he's coached junior national teams, B teams, this or that. It still doesn't mean anything, really, when you get that head coaching job. And Reed touched on it. It's the opponents that are the concern. It's not really your own team. You step into your own gym. You're in your own gym for 3-4 weeks. You have a good handle on what people can do. It's a question of how does what they can do relate to the international game and what are other teams doing to you?
And we never throw in a woman's name when we talk about that job. Paula Weisshoff probably be the top.
Yeah, because she could hit high balls over half the team.
I know. And she spent, even during the UC Irvine season this past fall, she was a lot of time with the national team.
I'd listen to Paula Weisshoff, because if you don't listen, she'll put you in a headlock.
You know, she coached with Jarrett, she coached with Mick, and I never talked to Mick about it, but Jarrett used to say that, you know, when he was at SC, that Paula was, she would come in and dominate, but just always had the attention of the girls. They respected her, listened to her, loved her. She had the credibility, she had the credentials, and she had the knowledge.
Yeah, she's got all those things, and she's very thoughtful, I think. Even, I don't know her that well. I've had several conversations with her at juniors tournaments, at dinners and stuff, and she's just very thoughtful. You get that from her, that she thinks about the game. She knows the game. Not always the case. Even if players have played for a long time, they don't always think about the game in a way that is relatable to other people.
I'm sensing future guests of the show.
Of course.
There you go. Hey, I have two questions for you guys.
Okay.
First, you know, in regards to Hugh making this decision, is staying on for 2 years beneficial to him? Does he gain anything by staying on for two more years?
No. You mean professionally?
Professionally.
I don't.
I mean, he's had two successful years, and he's already showed the transition.
And he got the job.
Yeah, and he got the job.
No, he already got the job. I don't think he gains anything professionally.
And the second question would be, has he been with the women's team long enough that change would continue? Would the patterns that he's instilled last?
No.
Yeah, I mean, it depends who comes in and takes that job. They could have a totally different system, and the women's team could be changing, and they wouldn't be ready by 2012.
That's the funny thing about women's volleyball. It's such a big landscape that there's a lot of diversity of thought.
Yeah.
As to how to do things. And I know there's been some frustration expressed by the volleyball community as it relates to the national team. You have Toshi's way of doing things. You have Long Ping's way of doing things. Now you have Hugh's way of doing things. And it was some frustration that Reed expressed with his team, that there was 4 years spent to create something great, not only results, forget the results, but yeah, to create something great from a team culture standpoint of this is how you play USA volleyball. This is how you act when you're on this team and have this position.
Sure.
And that all went away. Allen maintains some of it, but obviously Allen, any coach, has their own set of ideals, circumstances, philosophies. And to see that go away was a shame, and I think after 2 years, if it goes away, it's gone.
Personally, I would love to see him finish it out. I think there's a lot to gain. I think him closing it out and him, you know, completing this run with the women's team, whether it's a gold medal, a silver, a bronze, or whatever it is in London, I think it's, you know, he set out to be the coach in 2012, and they've made huge strides, and I would just like to see where it ends. I really would.
Definitely affects a lot of people, you know, the decision, and I think a lot of people are hanging on just to see when he decides to make that move. But it's really interesting to me as you look at the situation that, you know, a primetime college job is more desirable than a national team job, really, when we look at it, right? And that's really not the case. I think that's the case in a lot of sports, not just volleyball. But when you look around the world, that's not really the case.
Agreed. College is the pinnacle on the women's side
for U.S. sports. Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, even in football and basketball, maybe even. I mean, those guys are making big time money. They're staying in jobs for 30 years, and I guess it's personal preference in some of these other sports, but when you look at the other countries, you know, to coach a national team is the pinnacle.
If you want to get in on this discussion, you have a comment, something to say, 347-677-1525. I had one more question before we go to a break here real quick. Who is he going to look to for assistance at Minnesota? Any thoughts? Ex-players? Karch?
It's another hot topic, my friend. Does he start looking now?
Well, he tried to take the entire men's staff when he went to the women's team. I could see him doing the same thing.
He did. He took everybody. You're lucky he didn't take Aaron Brock.
Well, he would definitely want someone with Midwest and East Coast ties, I think.
Why?
Recruiting-wise.
Okay.
Knowing the area, knowing the kids.
Brandon Rosenthal, get your resume ready.
Jeremy?
All right.
How you feeling over there, buddy?
Feel great.
You excited?
3 hours of
sleep. Hey, when we come back, can we hear about last night? I mean, star sightings.
Sure.
What down?
I met Quincy Jones.
I mean, that's
big time. About it. We'll talk. Quincy Jones.
Hey, still up on the show, Misty May Trainer coming up. Ojan and John Tawa.
John Tawa call you? JT?
John Tawa. We don't have him
John
yet.
John the line?
Not yet. Soon, though, talking about prep volleyball. Big stuff going on in that world. And I'm sure we're going to get back to Hugh McCutchen at some point. Somebody will have a new thought. Give us a call. Email us, thenetlive@gmail.com. Whatever. Thanks for being there. The Net Live, right back. Hey, parents. Do you know about the USYVL, the United States Youth Volleyball League? Having taught over 100,000 kids ages 7 to 15 the sport of volleyball, the league's proven techniques, super fun approach, and self-esteem lifting methods are unmatched. Truly, volleyball starts here. For more information about the league and programs in your area, visit usyvl.org. That's usyvl.org.
My name is Q. Cupid Valentino, the Martin Bailey Cupid, and I just want to say one thing. Happy Valentine's Day.
Every day the 14th.
I don't think y'all heard, man. I just want to say happy Valentine's Day.
Every day the 14th.
Can y'all dig that? Now, when arrows don't penetrate, see.
Cupid grabs the pistol.
Yeah, now look at here, he shoots straight for your heart, now,
and he won't miss you,
so that's alright, y'all won't believe in me anyway, but,
you won't believe in me, but you bet me every time, so down, hold your baby, the right,
there's something to talk about, Santa Claus, but see, love will rule supreme,
happy Valentine's. Got it. When Cupid knocks at your door,
you can't ignore me.
There's no need to run. So happy Valentine's Day. Hey,
isn't it live? Grooving. The morning after the Grammys.
If you know what
love DJ Roche, big pot of coffee. Still nearly asleep on the couch. Geeter, you getting a little static?
You know, I was getting some tweets. People call me a player and a pig.
A pig, I love
because,
the pig call.
Back in 1997, I received flowers on Valentine's Day from a gal I knew and didn't really wasn't that into. And I took them; they were wonderful. I mean, they had to have been $100, you know, set of roses there, and gave them to someone else that I was courting at the time.
The girl who gave you the roses, did you ever go out with her?
Sure, we hung out.
Hook up with her?
Sure.
You give her a little piece of Chris McGee. That's what she was looking for.
A little taste of geek, maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure. I got to remember that. But it was, you know, I got the flowers, and it's nice. They were sent to my school, but, you know, just took them in my car, and that night delivered them to somebody else.
DJ Roche, sit up
re-gifting,
on the couch there.
I believe it's called.
Open your eyes.
Take the blanket off and the pillow.
Yeah, that's right. Tell us about last night. Give us the rundown.
Well, I got hired to be the house DJ for Interscope Records after party for the Grammy Awards. At a hotel in Beverly Hills on the rooftop.
Nice.
And I pretty much rocked it.
They gave you some free Dr. Dre Beats
some
headphones?
Beats headphones I'm wearing right now. Comfy.
Nice. They're kind of red, white, pink. Match your shirt?
They do match my shirt. I'm very color coordinated.
How were Dre and Snoop?
They went on at 2 o'clock, performed 5 songs, killed it. Dre, Interscope's been a client of mine for years, and I've seen him multiple times. Last night he was so animated and excited and happy.
How buff is he right now?
I'm scared. Not gonna lie.
Has to be juicing.
Yeah. He's
can't bite the hand that feeds him right there.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I gotta love the guy.
Yeah, no problem.
But last night was his first time performing at the Grammy Awards ever.
Really?
Yep.
All this time?
Yep.
They stick Eminem up there. They stick half a dozen proteges of him
yep.
up there. Never Dre. Is that because of him or because of them?
Probably a little of both.
Yeah. Be a little scared of Dre.
A little bit.
Mick Jagger. Performing at the Grammys as well.
I still haven't seen the Grammys.
I didn't know they had mummies performing.
Yeah, it was amazing. His act still goes. He still can bring it.
I was just glad for the Super Bowl this year they brought in someone that was under the age of 60.
Yeah. Isn't that nice?
It's like the Who, the Rolling Stones. I was waiting for Peter, Paul, and Mary or something.
I'm ready for Cheap Trick, my first concert ever.
Cheap Trick.
Back in the
wow.
late 80s.
How about Tesla?
I Want You to Want Me.
All right, Geeter.
Ready for our first guest?
Hit it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, our first guest is a big, big name in the world of juniors volleyball. He's a former golfer, basketball, football player. He's grown up in Florida. Covered sports here in town in the South Bay for the Easy Reader. That's when I met him. Fell in love with the game of volleyball. Has a lot of passion for it. He's the owner, writer, editor, very popular site called prepvolleyball.com, and there is a huge juniors weekend going on, so I want to bring in a friend of mine, John Tawa. JT, how are you? Welcome to the Net Live.
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me, Geeter.
And one thing I want to mention real quick is that you have a couple of sons there that are better athletes than you. His son, by the way, Barney, is like 11 or something. I don't know. How old is your oldest son?
He's 11.
One of the best baseball players in Oregon.
Nice.
Yeah. He comes from JT.
Hey, don't mean to brag, but you know, John Jaha, who was a 10-year major league player, came up to Tim yesterday at a basketball tournament and said he wants to train him. So, you know, he didn't even know who Tim was, but had heard through the grapevine about him, sought him out. Pretty exciting, I must say.
So basically, prep volleyball is going to exist for another 7 years, and then that's it.
We're working on the prototype for prepbaseball.com right now, yeah.
I love that. Now, JT, real quick before we get into Vegas and the big weekend going on nationally, talk about how prep volleyball got started. I believe in 2002 you joined student sports and take it from there.
Well, actually, I joined student sports in 2000. You know, I had a long and undistinguished career as a trial lawyer in downtown Los Angeles. You know, during the heyday of LA law, I actually worked in the LA law building, made my mother very proud because when the opening credits would roll, you could see the lights of the building. Then the light was on in my office, and my mother always said, "Oh, there's my son. He's working late."
Oh, that's awesome.
But, you know, I did a decade of the three-piece suit business and decided to get out and had to figure out what I was going to do. So, you know, one thing led to another. Started writing the sports page for the Easy Reader newspaper for $50 a week. And then my wife announced that we were going to have our first child, and it decided it was time to get a job that paid a little bit of money. Certainly not lawyer money, but a little bit of money. So I went to work for the Easy Reader full-time. One thing led to another. Met Andy Bark, who's a big shot in the South Bay, and he hired me to be the managing editor at Student Sports magazine. That was in 2000. Student Sports was an entity that had a publishing arm and wrote about all high school sports on a national basis. And so my job as managing editor was lots of things, but it also included, you know, getting people to subscribe to the magazine. And given, you know, that I edited an article written by Kim Blankenship, one of my dear friends, that said that there were 12,000 girls at the Davis Volleyball Festival. And I'd say, are you kidding me? Is that right? Well, then we should get some subscribers there. So I started writing volleyball articles in addition to everything else, and the response was overwhelming. Now, here's a guy, and I must say, it's kind of humbling to be in the company of you all, because I don't have that kind of background in the sport. I'm just a writer and somebody who has developed a passion for the sport over the years, but I don't have daughters who played. I didn't coach it. I didn't play it. I must confess, I still don't fully understand the game. But started writing it, and I guess there was a void that needed to be filled, and people started coming to Student Sports for volleyball. Well, Student Sports started having some financial trouble, and they were cutting our staff left and right, but I was hearing the need from the community for a standalone volleyball website. So at the time, Kevin Lasseau, who's now an assistant at Yale and was at the time editing vball.com, he was laid off from his full-time work in Indianapolis, and I said, you know what, let's do this thing together. So we formed prepvolleyball.com over a several-week period of time in January 2003, and it's been going ever since.
John, you certainly are filling a space that people have responded to. What sort of web traffic are you getting? Give us an idea of how many people use Prep Volleyball.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, we have 16,000 paid subscribers to the website, which is about what I expected. Roughly, I'd say 10% of the junior volleyball population subscribes to the site. Our message boards, which are free, we tend to see between 30 and 50 million page views a year on that.
Wow, that's an incredible number.
Wow.
Incredible number.
Yeah. It's very popular. I must say a few years ago, it was much more of a free-for-all. You were allowed to post messages anonymously, and this was largely before the advent of instant communication in the form of Twitter or Facebook, and people were coming to us and also before automated results, real-time results, became a norm in club volleyball circles. And so people came to us for all of the up-to-the-minute information that we could provide via our message board service. Now that we've clamped down a little bit, require people to register, identify who they are, by and large, we have information about who's posting and what they're posting. that the traffic has lessened somewhat. Some of it's gone over to Volley Talk, which is a little bit more of an open forum.
Oh, we know.
we're part of the junior community, and my job is to make sure that we protect these young people at all costs, and they don't need to come under that critical glare of the spotlight like you do once you get to college. They don't need it, and so I won't allow it. And especially given that parents tend to play a very large role in the junior community, they have daughters who are in competition for scholarship dollars, for recognition, et cetera, it can be quite contentious, and so we try to clamp down on that at every opportunity.
Was it a desire to protect the players and their reputations and the arguments surrounding them that made you move toward having people identify themselves? Or were there other factors at work?
Well, there were a lot of things at work, but by and large, we're hearing from the club directors out there is that while we really enjoy the content that you put up on Prep Volleyball, the content is always positive. It advances the interest of the game, exalts the players who are playing, et cetera. The negativity on the message board sometimes overshadowed that. And they wanted to be able to fully support PrepVolleyball.com, be able to tell their parents to go join the site, et cetera. And so long as we had it where you could post anonymously on the message board, they didn't feel comfortable doing that because they didn't know if it was the appropriate atmosphere to encourage parents to join.
Listening to John Tawa from PrepVolleyball.com on the net live. And JT, coming up this weekend, the big Vegas tournament, and there's a thing called Senior Showcase. Can you give us a little history about that and what it means to these seniors? It's for unsigned seniors to have a chance to come and play Friday night, I believe, in front of hundreds of college coaches.
Yeah, the Las Vegas Invitational tournament that the SCVA has been running for many, many years now has always had its focus on placing unsigned seniors in colleges. So, and that's been so, and it continues to be so, even though we know that the recruiting calendar seems to be much more accelerated than it has been in the past. About 5 years ago, Ojan, who I understand is a frequent guest of the show, gave me a call and said, this needs to happen. We need to have some kind of standalone showcase for unsigned seniors now because they're not getting their due anymore. And this tournament's becoming more important than just an opportunity for seniors to showcase their skills. It's become a national tournament with national implications. People are trying to win, and we need to have a time where college coaches can get together with only those players the coaches know to be uncommitted and try and get some matches going. I asked him at the time, I said, how many kids do you think we'll get? He said, 75, 80 kids, that'd be great. So, okay, well, for 75 or 80 kids, I can do that. I mean, it wasn't something that I was going to be doing personally. I was going to delegate responsibilities for this, and I selected, for the first year, I selected the coach out in Northern California, Golden Bear, Emerson Salonga. And thought, okay, it's going to be a nice, good thing. We're going to do a good thing for the community. In the first year, I think we had 320 people sign up. And last year, I think we were at almost 800, which I must tell you was unmanageable. We had all 18 courts at Cashman Field Center, more than 200 colleges and universities represented, every court going for several hours at a time with club coaches acting as on-court trainers. We had evaluators. We did physical testing. It's mind-boggling how big it's become. And it's a great source of pride, not only for Prep Volleyball, but for the SCVA as well. I mean, I spent a lot of time talking to Ann Davenport after, the 3 days after the showcase, and she just feels so good about the opportunity that we are providing to these young people to be seen by these college coaches to have another chance to impress them and hopefully to find a fit that works for them.
So, John, real quick, if there's a parent listening out there right now, has a senior, how can they get involved for Friday night?
Well, they can't.
It's already done? Signed up?
They can't. When the showcase first started, we accepted walk-ups at the last minute. We did everything we could to get seniors into this environment. And the reason was simple. I didn't want to deny any player the opportunity to showcase her skills because she might not have heard about the opportunity beforehand. However, as this thing has grown beyond our imagination, it has become necessary to impose conditions. And, you know, the university athlete is involved. They have all the players' biographical information and contact information. It's been disseminated to the college coaches. We have to print numbers and names, bib numbers and names for the kids. They have to have court assignments. There's so many things that go into what has to take place on Friday night that I became convinced by the folks that I've hired to run this event that it just wasn't possible to keep it open the last minute. So this year we opened registration on the second day of December, closed it on the sixth day of February. I think that was plenty of time, more than 2 months, for people to sign up. Sent several emails out to all the college, all the club directors out there, and posted links on the SCVA website. So while I'm sympathetic to those who didn't get the word in time or decided that maybe they'd just walk up and do it.
Well, hopefully they all got in, JT. That's plenty of time.
Hopefully. We're at over 615 this year, you know, for three sessions, 4:36 and 7:30. And we'll use all 18 courts again. So essentially we'll have, you know, the equivalent of 54 courts going with no more than 15 people per court.
All right. Well, thank you, JT. We appreciate it. And that's a great thing you're doing. And thanks for coming on the show, man. And good luck Friday night. I will definitely see you out there.
All right. My pleasure. Take care.
All right, JT. Thanks.
All right.
800 seniors.
Whew. That's a lot. Unmanageable. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Sheesh. 800 people. 800 people doing anything, much less 800 junior girls.
You know, I'm in the club world, and a lot of time with the seniors, it's a full panic at the beginning of their senior year when they're not signed yet. And it always baffles me because a lot of these girls start playing in the 18s division on a 17s team when they're juniors. And how much better are you sometimes between your junior year and your senior year? It's their first year up in that division. You haven't been playing that level of volleyball yet. I feel like too many times, too many kids put so much pressure on getting recruited by their junior year. A lot of them quit their senior years, think they're never going to have a chance to play, and it's such a pressure-packed club season. I mean, I know what a difference I was in every sport I played between my junior and senior year.
Absolutely. That's a funny thing to me about people recruiting down into sophomores and freshmen and watching people in eighth grade. Like, come on, seriously? You have no idea what these people are going to look like. They may be peaking now at the top of their sport in 10th grade. Terrific. It doesn't mean anything 2 years down the road necessarily, so... Yeah, I love the service that he's providing, though, for those players that are peaking late. Having been a person who peaked late in life, it's dear to my heart. While we're in the junior space, we're going to keep on going, Geeter. Ojan is here. Yeah.
Ojan just goes by one name.
It's like Madonna, like Prince, except he's not the artist formerly known as.
Oj, how are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely, 100%. We just had JT on. I'm not sure if you were listening, but, you know, that thing that you actually, he said he gave you credit and said a lot of it was your idea. 800 seniors. That sounds overwhelming, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if the idea was originally spawned from me, but there was definitely a demand. And you know, in a couple moments I can kind of go back and review Vegas as a significant event, I think we can relate some mention back to the Unsigned Senior Showcase. The Vegas tournament itself is relevant for two major reasons. One is recruitment, and the other is it standing as the first major nationally competitive tournament of the year. As far as college exposure, exposing kids, athletes to the schools and the recruiters that come there. The event itself, I mean, and you know, I think we take all responsibility for this, is it's got some serious limitations. There, once it grew, and the event's over 25 years old now, once it grew to a certain stage, it stopped being a super effective event in terms of college placement. Now, the reason why is because there's one main facility. This facility is known as Cashman. It addresses less than 25% of the 600 teams that participate in the event at any given time. So just to let you know what the dynamic is there, college recruiters, especially in Vegas, want to spend their time courtside evaluating talent or giving face time to athletes that they know would fit in great with their program, but want to show them the love. Hey, this is a program you know, we're definitely interested in, we're invested in your development. But they can't do that if they're driving one city block in Las Vegas and it takes 15 minutes to get to the next facility. So Cashman is the only central facility. All the other facilities that address over 75% of the playing sites are high schools, and they're strewn across a 20-mile radius.
Yeah, so if you're the 21st seed, like someone I know, because you lost one match over the past 6 months, you're at a place no one's ever heard of.
21st seed? Who's doing these
things? Oh, yeah. Sports Shack. We lost last week.
A lot of teams get to seed like that. But, the dynamic, it's just tough because, and that's the reason why the Unsung Senior Showcase is such a big deal, is it is one-stop shopping. It removes all the other kids that people know, you know, if Jane Croson's of the world that are going to Hawaii, they don't need the additional exposure. It provides a safe environment where kids won't get hurt. Because a lot of club coaches aren't going to say, hey, we're playing for three straight days. Let's turn them over for a fourth day before the tournament starts, expose them to getting hurt before they actually play in the Vegas tournament. So you corral all the seniors that are unsigned. You put them in one place. John Tawa has been very effective at addressing volleyball experts that can create environment where they can be skill tested, show their stuff in a place where everyone can see them and track where they're going after that. It's a great starting point for any college coach. And so he filled an amazing void that developed as this tournament grew faster than we could manage it.
Now, Ojan, tell us about some teams to watch in the 18th level.
Well, there's a bunch. I mean, obviously, the great thing about this tournament is it's the first time it integrates the entire nation. Of the 48 states participating, there are teams from Florida, Pennsylvania, Texas, Northern California, Pacific Northwest, and everything in between.
We got a little influx from Canada, actually.
Yeah, Dino, the team that was the number one team in Canada at the 16s level, is playing in the 17s level. And I don't think they have a terrific seed, but that would be a great dark horse pick if I was looking to see a surprise squad come in and do a great job. I would, at the 17s and the 18s level, almost 25 teams in the top 50 in Tawa's rankings are participating in this event. So it's big. I would say the knock on the tournament itself is the seeding process, which is kind of fraught with its defects. And there's not much we can do because it's so early on, it's almost impossible to have a great basis of information for seeding. The SCVA uses its qualification process to kind of rank its teams. It's part of the reason why a Sports Shack team is such a good squad. But they had a hiccup in the third qualifier, and now they're not even among the top seeds.
Long Beach is the one seed?
Long Beach is a one seed, and they've managed to be efficient the whole way through. And when you look at squads that do well at this tournament, there's two types of squads. One is obviously the teams that are, you know, talented and, you know, they're well coached. But then there are teams that are just well organized. Typically, those are clubs that you know, their teams have been together through the age groups. I would say, I'll give you three examples of teams that fit that profile. I would say Wave is a program at the 18s level. It's a group that's been taken along slowly up through the age groups. They've always been a perennial JO team. That team's got two kids going to Stanford. One of my favorite players is Carza Lowe, going to UCLA to play for your friend Joy. And Mike Seeley, she's a big 6'3" lefty opposite, can score at will, played for LCC. And they're coached by Crystal Jackson. Another squad I think is going to be pretty good is Club West. Club West is another team carried along through the age groups, and they are very organized. And then, obviously, I think Long Beach has been efficient all the way through.
What about the team from Dallas Premier?
Well, Dallas comes on the radar automatically. People view that team as the most talented team in the country. They have four players that reach 10-5 or higher. I went and watched the high school All-American match at the Final Four. Cat Bell is at 10-8. The African-American left-side hitter who's going to Texas. I mean, this kid's a freaky athlete. And given that guys like you and I have coached the 18s level for a number of years, I mean, anytime you even have one kid who's at 10-5, you're going to be in the mix with the national scope.
Yeah, let alone.
Several. So they're also extremely well coached. Their head coach is Mike Menace, who used to be at Tennessee. He's been a D1 coach for almost 20 years now. So that's going to be a team that's in the mix. You know, I didn't want to mention Coast or Sport Shack because it just doesn't sound like we would be objective in reviewing them. But anytime you remove your own team from the mix, it's another way of saying they're in the mix.
Ozan, you haven't really been listening to the show. Geeter's team is always in the mix.
I was not even going to say anything about my team. The 21st seed, I would be happy to play us. If I'm you guys out there, hopefully you draw us. We'll see what happens.
I don't know. I mean, the seeding is weird because when you put a team like that, I mean, hey, the smart money says two top teams that will probably meet in the finals could be Sport Shack and Rancho. And Sport Shack's got a kid, you know, all two Geeter's horn. Jane Croson is a half Samoan athlete with a $1 million arm. She's perhaps the best spike server in the country, and the kid's legit. The setter for that the team, Rebecca Strelo. It's been 10 years since a sophomore won the 18 Open at the setting position. Strelo has done that already. She's a junior now. People are comparing her to Carly Lloyd, who's an athlete I got to coach for several years in club. Carly Lloyd was the NC2A Player of the Year at the setting position. And some people, it won't be me, some people think she's further along than Carly was at the same age. I mean, very special athlete. Rancho Valley is also another team that's extremely well coached. They have the number one recruit in the nation, Krista Van Sant.
Going to Washington.
Just a fantastic 6'2", can bend, can ball handle. Her arm reminds me of Brent Hilliard back when he was, you know, in his prime. Elastic, creative. She hits like a college volleyball player, has a complete strike chart, probably the best kill potential of any player in the tournament coming up this weekend.
Can you pick a winner in the 17th? Oh, Sean, can you pick a winner? Can you go out on a limb and pick a winner in the 17th? Or a final, at least?
Yeah, you know, I would think at the 17th or the 18th.
Both. I'm going to start you with the 17s and then 18s.
17s, I'm going to go with the dark horse. I think the 17s is going to be NCVC. It's a team out of the Northern California area.
NCVC
Mock. People say it's the most physical team in the entire Northern California region, which includes 18 squads. Wow. They have four kids above 10 feet. And you know, they have middles going to UCLA, Washington, and I expect that team to blow up out there. The other squad that I think people might guess to do well is Club Red. Club Red's an athlete, a 6'4 left side hitter named Haley Lawless. She's going to UCLA as well. But They recently lost to a team that's not in the mix, the 18s level. And so we'll see if they bounce back. There are a lot of teams that walk into that tournament with a chip on their shoulder, including Sport Shack, the 18s level. And the same could be true with a team like Club Red.
Club Red from Arizona.
So, you know, the interesting thing here is that there's a component in the Vegas tournament. They use a device called the Day One Reseed, and that's to kind of eliminate or wipe away the imperfections in the seeding that were done before the tournament started. And I don't like that dynamic, one, for a couple, well, for two different reasons. One, on day one, because the tournament should have a recruiting element, teams are going to look around and say, hey, points are precious. So they're not going to go to their benches often or as early. And that's really the time when you should be resting your studs, who will inevitably play on day two and three, and going to kids and spreading the love for the athletes, the bench, that doesn't get an opportunity to get exposed. When you reseed after day one, it cuts against that. So I'm a little disappointed in that being used as a device to correct the seeds after day one. The other thing I would say is that beating a team 25-7 in junior volleyball, no one benefits.
Yeah, I agree.
Not the team that's superior, you know, that's going into a full-court press to run up the score, and not the team that's receiving the beatdown. But the issue is, if you get a top eight seed after the reseed, you're back at Tashman, which is essentially the mothership for recruitment.
So, all right, Dojon. Hey, buddy, we got the tournament coming up, what, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday? You can follow it. Where is there a website you can follow it on?
Yeah, it's on the SCVA website, and that'll point you to Advanced Event System under the Vegas tournament. And I believe they're keeping real time stats.
The real question is, after you spend your day at Cashman, where are you going that night?
Well, that's the thing, Ojana.
It's
almost like a curse, Vegas. Think about this: you go to Vegas for 4 days with your friends, three nights, but you got to get up at six in the morning to go work.
That's right. You have to make choices, Geeter. I mean, whether you go big on Friday night is a whole other story.
It didn't stop people from being out at the Hard Rock a couple years ago when I was there.
Yeah, what coaching staff will win the title in Vegas for biggest ragers?
Now he really wants to hear.
No. I don't want to win this award. Too old now.
You want to win the warm-ups, the match, and the socials, what you're saying.
Yes. Absolutely.
By the way, I like the idea of re-gifting the roses. I'm not sure if that would fly with anybody I know. But
you are also now a pig.
People called me a pig, called me selfish, called me a player, all over.
For putting yourself out there.
I mean, it's the truth. 1997. It happened. And I'm okay with it.
Own it. I like you own it.
Ojan, will I see you Friday night at the Hard Rock? Yes or no?
We'll see. Yeah, I wanted to touch real quick on the Hugh McCutchen thing. I mean, I was one of the guys that's pinging you guys to find out answers on Hugh's decision.
Oh, I remember.
Yes.
I don't think people realize, when you read the announcement, the language says, you know, he will be coming to Minnesota on a mutually agreed-upon day.
That's
to me,
it.
That very careful wordsmithing. So, you know, privately, I think we're all hoping that he'll stick it out because he's done such a great job. But as Reed pointed out, you know, how much of an advantage to his long-term career does it make sense to stick around? So I'm glad you guys were able to address that. Thanks.
I think he stays, Ojan, personally.
I do, too.
I think he finishes out London and then takes over Minnesota.
You put that much into that process, you want to see it finish out.
It would be so cool to see, you know, our national team being led to another Olympics on the women's side with somebody as wildly charismatic as Hugh. So, Hugh, if you're listening, I'm putting in my pitch to see you stick it out.
And, Ojan, I have one more question. Does it always have to be the Hard Rock for the coaches? Is there another club we can go to in Vegas? Can we switch it up?
Tao.
You're the master of ceremonies.
This guy just wants to win the tournament. You know what I mean? I can just tell. He's not focused at all on the nighttime. I'm picking Coast to win the 18s.
Yeah, well, we can shine the light on different teams as much as you like. Yeah, your team's in the mix, and there's a bunch of other good squads. Dallas Premier is a team that I think we all can't wait to get a look-see at because they're out of the state, and they have several named players, and we know that they're going to be extremely well coached. So
let's just
we'll see how things go.
Yeah, let's take their coach out and let's get some info on the team on Friday night. Ojan, make it happen.
Have a good night.
All right, buddy. Hey, great job, Osh.
All right, see you.
See you later, buddy. He's got a good team.
He's got good information on the juniors. That's a lot of stuff I didn't know.
He's not putting his team in the mix, obviously, like he said. It just means you're in the mix, but he has got the biggest, most physical team in the SCVA, which means one of the most physical teams in the country. Year of the Oge, I like to tell him. I think it's his year.
You know, I knew that Northridge was out of the top 15. I didn't know that you had dropped out of the top 15.
Yeah, we lost one match. Long Beach 17s got upset last week in 3, 15-13, and we dropped into Division II and are the 21st seed going into Vegas. So we'll see.
Hey, it was a good year last year.
Got to be the coaching.
You claimed it last year. You got to claim it this year.
Reed wanted more talk about the nightlife in Vegas, and I apologize, Reed, but this was about the kids.
I just want to do the show from Reed's house in Vegas. That's what I want to
do. I know. I agree.
Does the parents' attendance increase that it's a Vegas tournament? I mean, are there more?
138%, yes.
I'd see a show, see some gambling.
You definitely see some coaches that have really, you know, by Sunday they look just awful. Craig Paisani jumps to mind, a friend of mine from Surf City.
I hope he's listening.
He goes hard.
Still to come on the program today, College Volleyball Weekly coming up. Pepperdine Fight Song. It's going to be good. I'm looking forward to that. Mike Sonheimer, Rob Espiro, Jay Hossick, and Misty May Trainer coming up about a half hour from now. Talk to her about all kinds of things. Her new book. This is The Net Live. Be right back. Party time.
Don't you want somebody to love?
You know Reed's got
this reminds me of Cable Guy. I don't know if you ever seen
I saw that.
Jim Carrey do the song
going
karaoke crazy. With that lisp.
Not sure that was a great movie.
You know it wasn't, but anything Jim Carrey does is there something in my teeth when he's got just the asparagus out of his teeth in Pet Detective 2. That was good.
He became a caricature of himself. Now he
Finkel, Einhorn.
I don't know why that is.
I mean, psycho villain. Finkel's the mayor.
I saw the Truman Show recently. That was interesting when I was on the road. I hadn't seen that one in a while.
Yeah.
Gator, you got a problem over there? You look a little aggravated.
You know, well, I got aggravated with you.
Yeah. I'm falling asleep.
During the show, a little bit, you know, with JT on, and then we had Ojan on. It's a lot of juniors talk, which I admit is my world. It's an important world of volleyball, by the way, just because it's not in the Kevin Barnett Supercross world.
Wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah, the international.
Great race this week, by the
way. Who's playing in Belgium? You know, you know, he's up in his seat, he's smiling, he's waving me off for questions. You know, I get my peeps on to talk juniors, and he's petting the cat, he's on the computer, the chat room. You know what I mean? Just, yeah, slumping in his chair. It's a body language thing, you know, but yet, you know, off air, he wants to talk juniors. Let's get the juniors involved.
He just doesn't know anything about it, and it's not my fault. How about you come to a tournament? Do a show from Vegas. Rosenthal told you, get involved. You know?
That's a great idea. Show from Vegas. We've got the invite, by the way, from Desert Elite Volleyball Club. They gave us the invite.
This next week. I'm thinking about it. I just told the wife last night I may have to go to Vegas on Sunday. I may bring the kids, go to the water park. Oh, wait, it's cold. Bring the kids, take them gambling. Wait,
there are thousands and thousands of young girls that want to fall in love with the Net Live. They just don't know about it.
We don't have enough gossip on this show to make it happen, though, Peter.
It's a good thing we don't have live streaming.
You know, Jean was ducking a question about the nightlife in Vegas, and he runs Coast.
Got to play it smart.
Yeah, it's a good thing by him to do that. That's why he's so much smarter than me. Here's the thing, though. I am sick and tired of leading charges. I'm past that. I have a kid on the way. I have a three-year-old. It's time for the younger generation of coaches.
Cue the sad music.
The younger generation of coaches to lead here in Vegas. I will be there. I will still put up MVP-type numbers. On Friday night. I will not go Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night. I will go hard Friday night.
Wait, do we have any sad music? Nothing?
But now that I'm the 21st seed, I need to focus. Crickets? Is that crickets? You're wearing a pink shirt, bro.
You know, I'm looking for something.
Give me your crickets.
Secure
with myself.
I can't make it out at night. I just can't do it.
I didn't say that, bro.
I get too tired by Sunday.
I didn't say that, Barney.
I'm
just saying
not ready to talk to Shane
Croson
by Sunday because I'm exhausted.
I don't want to lead the charge anymore. I am ready for the younger generation to say.
Now, who would that be? You have anybody in mind? Maybe like a Matt Boyce?
You know, Matt Boyce is going to be there. His wife does run a club, SCVC, Caballeros, down in Orange County. That's a great call. Even though he's getting up in the 30s now, you know, maybe it needs to be a 25-year-old leader out there, someone that can lead for the next 15 years.
Is that the run you're on right now?
Age. Where is he? Where is she? I want someone young going, you know what? We've been going to the Hard Rock for the last 15 Vegases. Let's switch it up.
How old are Coley's kids? How much longer
11.
Do we have to wait?
Okay. 11. The goalie's kid will probably be there in 3 years. I just, you know, hey, this segues into the AVP.
No, it does?
Yes.
All right, tell
because
me.
Because we're always looking for who's that next guy? Who's the young guy that can kind of bring it on and off the court that people follow, they love?
Rosenthal.
Rosie.
That's it. He's
who's behind Rosie?
Don't look for a replacement.
Matt Anderson.
Listen, don't replace him. Don't draft your future quarterback when you have a great quarterback right now. Let Rosenthal rage. Everyone else be a professional.
Why can't you rage and be professional? Why can't you win on and off the court? Why not, Barney?
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Because Karch Karai and Kent Steffes back in the day trained hard.
Sure.
Made it happen.
Yeah. Did they not rage? Ever?
I don't know.
Well, they did. They did at the appropriate times.
Well, okay, there's your qualifier right there. Rather than the all-out rage that it was for all those guys before who were winning tournaments, cases of beer, it's la-di-da, it's great life, ha, fantastic, and then they were losing 16 tournaments in a row. These other guys are taking home $400,000 in prize money, and all of a sudden, raging wasn't so much fun anymore.
You can win both sides of the plate. You can win. You can win on the court. You can win off the court. And it's the younger generation, as they break into the game, it is their job to win and play, bring the new fans in. As the elder statesmen move on, they get to pick and choose which games they want to play in. We cannot rage 365 days a year. You just cannot do it. Long in the tooth. Father time has caught up. But I tell you.
Yes? Tell me.
When there's an all-star game, I'm ready to play. Ready to go.
Are you ready to play or are you ready to rage?
Ready to go.
I don't know if you're ready to play.
Absolutely
your
ready
New
to rage.
Your resolution was that you were ready to play. Are you ready to play?
Absolutely 100%. I will go hard. I just won't go hard 3 days in a row.
Speaking of New Year's resolutions, I just got an email here about NBC's The Biggest Loser. They're looking to cast an entire season of Olympians, ex-fat Olympians, people who've fallen way out of shape after their success with Rulon Gardner, weighed in at whatever, 485 pounds or whatever he was. They want to cast an entire group. It says here, which is fine, until the very final line says here, if you know any worthy candidates, please let us know. They must be at least 100 pounds overweight.
Oh, great.
Know any ex-volleyball players 100 pounds overweight?
No, I just like talking about Vegas. I thought that would get you excited when you heard about the Dallas Premier team with the three kids touching 10-5, the Cat Bell kid that's one of the top players in the country going to Texas. I thought that would excite you a little bit. You like those. You and Reed like that stuff. Oh, touches this, you know. That sounded weird. Touches 10-5. Live arm. Torque versus Pike.
I love the Brent Hilliard shout out on the arm.
Yeah. $1 million arm, too.
Million.
I heard that one.
$1 million arm. Was that said? I must have been slumping in my seat at the time.
Yeah, you guys will get it. You guys will get it. Want you guys to, you know, learn the juniors game a little bit better. That's part of this show now. Do you hear me?
I'm going to take
start
it back.
Start coming to a juniors tournament.
I'm going to take it back to something that I know a little bit better.
Hugh McCutcheon?
Something I care about.
Who's playing in New Zealand right now?
Time for the College Volleyball Weekly.
Oh, here it is.
In light of the fact that Pepperdine dominated USC this past week, we're going to play Pep's fight song. What is this, an accordion? Is there a kazoo in here?
Is this the Pepperdine fight song? Are they number one in the nation? Why are they...
I've never even heard
on.
This thing.
Why is...
Yeah, this what? This isn't right.
This is from 1970.
This
a big
is
match.
You saying this is my show, and none of you are included in it.
No, this is me putting on the introduction to the flea circuit. In association with the American Volleyball Coaches Association, and live each week presents the best in college volleyball with the College Volleyball Weekly. Wow. Pepperdine should be embarrassed. That's a sad, sad song. No, you should play the cricket. That's better.
Dude, that is the worst
That's
fight song ever. I'm sorry. I mean, I have friends at Pepperdine.
You know what?
And I'm going to talk to them about it. I mean,
I love,
this is why.
I can't wait for SC to be back on top, just so I'm more pumped coming in rather than just feeling like I ought to put on multicolors and work at hot dog on a stick. Well, it's been our resident experts, Mike Sondheim, Rob Espero, and Jim Hosick.
I am loving the hot dog on a stick reference right there. That
yeah.
is wow.
You're
telling
a football
you never
team to have a fight
song
like Penn State, Ooh. Ohio State, UCLA.
I don't know where they're going to play. There's a big grass field out front they might play on. Go the wrong way to hit a tree.
Mike Sondheim, I'm going to start with you. You've been around the country. You've heard a million fight songs. Is that the worst one you've ever heard?
It's right up there in the top 10 all time, and I've been a lot of places.
And it's off of their own site, too. This isn't like I found it somewhere else. It says Pepperdine.
Well, Pepperdine had the biggest win of the week, so they deserve the fight song.
Well, and you know Marv never plays that song on a recruiting trip. There's absolutely no way.
Can you imagine Marv, like, after a big win, leading this team in the locker room? If there is video of that, put it on YouTube. I guarantee a million hits by noon.
With the little streamers out the side, like the old.
Oh my god! Like Marv Pan's feet
with a scepter. Oh my gosh!
Wow, Michael, talk about that win, Pepperdine USC. A good thing for the Trojans. Sometimes a loss.
Let's first talk about how never in the history of men's collegiate volleyball have the top five teams all lost on the same night. That's never happened before.
Hopefully.
And then I'm not sure SC would have lost if they had Austin Zahn in the middle. I think that's one of the big things they lost. He's such a valuable player, and he didn't get to play because of an ankle sprain. But I think it's good for volleyball because we've talked about it being wide open, and when the top five can all lose on the same night, it just means SC's got a big week because SC's got to play Stanford this week, and so does Pepperdine. And Pepperdine get back in the race with a couple of wins, and SC will reestablish at number one with a couple of wins.
Rob, UC Irvine also had a rough week. Tell us about what was going on down there.
Well, they took Stanford to 5 after Stanford had a surprising 3-set loss to UC San Diego the night before, which was, I couldn't believe the game tracker. But apparently, you know, with what Irvine's going on, they're still trying to figure out their lineup. So they're going with a smaller middle in Kevin Carroll now, and they're finally getting Jordan Dufault back in the mix at the outside, along with Corey Yoder. And Carson Clark is still trying to get the rhythm they had from last year because he's not getting the same numbers, but it also seems that others are focusing on him. Setting has still been an issue, and we're just not blocking a lot of balls on the Irvine side.
Rob, why is it? I think back to Mike Lambert when he went to the left, came back and played at Stanford. He didn't dominate the way you thought he would. His team won. His team was very successful. He played well, but he didn't dominate the way you'd think an Olympian would. Now Carson Clark goes and plays world championships and comes back. Why is he not having the success that you would think with the international experience?
Well, I think that, you know, obviously you've got some of the best setters in the world setting you when you're training with a national team, and he comes back to you've got Daniel Stork, who was a true freshman that was setting him earlier in the season, who's just still trying to figure out the offense, and has got great hands, but Carson hits a lot of balls in rhythm and a quicker ball at that backside. So wasn't quite getting it done, so Sparrow brought in Anthony Spittle, the senior setter, and he's got to get back in rhythm as well. So Carson's not getting the same sets he's getting on the national level.
You know, Jay, you mentioned the upset alert with Northridge over Long Beach State. Long Beach State, who surprisingly came in at number two in the country and only lost one match, was that more of them maybe starting to fall back a little bit, or was Northridge playing a little bit better these days?
You know, I think the most dangerous position to be in is the favorite in any match because there's expectations that are put on you. And Long Beach State, to their credit, they've done a very nice job. And I've talked to some people that are closely related to that program, and they've all said the same thing that, you know, individually they may not be the best players, but as a team they're playing really, really well together. If you look at their stats, it's the same seven or eight guys that are playing the whole time. So that being said, you know, I, to be honest with you, and I'm going to throw myself under the bus, I threw that out there only because I wanted to give you a little love and, you know, get your team a little play right there. That I did not really expect Long Beach to go down like that. But that being said, you look at the weekend, and I, to be honest with you, don't think that the Pepperdine-USC match was that big of a deal. Pepperdine was at home. They won in five. It wasn't like they won in three. And, you know, we all know that Pepperdine is a very good team, and they're very well coached. I think it was just kind of a mishap. And I think Sandy, I think you're right. With Austin Zahn not being in there, that might have had something to do with it. I think the big match, though, is the UCSD-Stanford. And I think BYU losing to Loyola, although they
definitely
were not having Sander
That makes a big difference.
That makes a big difference. I think those two matches are the bigger stories. And so, you know, Northridge, hats off to them. I'm glad they got a win against a good team. You know, they're still kind of figuring themselves out. And Robbie, I'm still a little upset that your team didn't figure out their roster lineup a little bit differently than they did last week against us. But
Should we get to what happened to Penn State against Ohio State? That was a crushing.
That was a beatdown. I'm not going to lie to you. It was a little bit of a beatdown. But, and I've made this statement before, and I'll say it again, Ohio State is very good. They're all seniors, or at least for the most part they are. They do not do anything flashy. They just make you play the game. And Ohio State's going to be a team that I'm going to make a sleeper call. Depending upon who they get matched up with, they may see themselves in the last match of the year. They're pretty darn good.
Very much so. I agree. Because, they came close to beating Pepperdine twice, and then you have to look at they've beaten two West Coast teams back there on a neutral site, too.
Yep, and I guess the Pepperdine matches, they were the big guy was sick. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It could be a different story.
Sandy, is this kind of parody a case for expanding the field for men's volleyball?
I would love it to go to eight teams. I think it's overdue. You look at a sport like gymnastics, only has 20 teams left in Division I, and they get to be able to run like a six-team championship and a regional. I think it would just be great if they even expand to six teams to give the number one and two seeds a first-night bye and make it a three-night tournament. I mean, guys are young, between 18 and 22. I mean, Geeter could play 10 matches a day back then.
Oh, God, those days.
So why is it that they won't allow that? The NCAA won't allow that, given that gymnastics is a similar size.
It's basically because of the cost factor. I mean, they finally approved a Division III championship, which is great, but based on what their cost factors in doing it, they just have to keep lobbying, the committee has to keep lobbying, but the Division I numbers haven't increased by any stretch to really justify that. That's how the Division III got their championship in, because that's where most of the additions are to the men's college game.
And also with that, Sandy, I absolutely agree with you. The other thing is that back in the day, they only asked for four teams, and we were
that
just
was a
in
mistake.
The men's meeting.
Yeah.
It was a big mistake. And one of the things in the men's meetings this year at Kansas City, you know, they were talking about the Division III championships, and Al Scates had one suggestion. He says, do not ask for four and hope to get eight. Ask for eight, and you'll get what you ask for. And so, unfortunately, I don't think they're going to go to six teams. I don't think they're going to do anything that has to do with a three-night-in-a-row match scenario. I've talked to some people in the higher-ups, and they just are completely against that. And to be honest with you, I think the coaches and players would be against it because a third night straight would just be a lot of bad volleyball going around. But I would love to see eight as well. I think it's a real good format. And this should be the topic that we talk to when you talk to your next big coaches that are women's coaches, guys. Ask them why they don't sponsor men's volleyball and why they aren't doing anything to help that.
That's what I'm talking. That's what we want to talk with John Cook about. Is why doesn't Nebraska have a program? Why doesn't Nebraska have a program?
They would have a humongous following if Nebraska had a program. It would absolutely be the biggest program in the Midwest.
Isn't it simply called Title IX?
Yeah, but if you look at what happened with Cal Berkeley, I mean, it's all about numbers. It's all about Title IX. It's all about now and opportunities. And you have to have, look at your student body, and it's very difficult to add a men's sport at any school. I mean, California had to bring back two women's sports with a men's sport because of numbers. If they didn't do that, it wouldn't balance out with the numbers and end up losing two more men's sports, including a staple like baseball.
I agree with you, Sandy. I think the challenge is that California is a state that's in disarray. They're not going to do anything for the next 10 years that's going to add any sport. Now, granted, we hear about Fullerton and we hear about some other schools down
right.
south that are thinking about it. And, boy, I tell you, any school that starts a men's varsity program now, within 2 to 3 years, can be instantly successful in pushing for a title. It's going to be the teams that are outside of California, the teams like Nebraska, the teams like Texas. Look, if you start a program at Northwestern or Wisconsin or Michigan, for that matter, do you know how good that program would be in such a short amount of time? And then the Big Ten can have their own conference, and they can be a part of the dance. It'd be a lot of fun.
Now, this is question. The sport, there's no way that it's a cost issue. If you look at Nebraska, they own the equipment, they have the
yep.
ball, they've got plenty of gym space, the
yep.
travel costs are negligible, the students in the school are negligible, and you could fill the stands with enough people to cover any of those costs. So that's
absolutely
and anytime the NCAA starts their bleeding heart crap about they don't have enough money to support this championship, that championship, I just find it really disheartening. They signed an $800 million television contract, and they're a $1 billion organization. They can't afford $45 grand.
I agree.
Championship an extra day. It's a joke, but it's a topic for another day.
Correct.
Loyola
yep.
Chicago, with that victory over BYU, do they get back into the top 50?
They should. Who are you asking? They should, but I don't know if they will.
Mike,
yes.
does that get them any sort of traction into the top 50?
I think people in the West who have to look at it voting have to put them right now second behind Ohio State in the Midwest. And you look at Loyola came very close the week before. I mean, you know, they battled Stanford, a very tough four-game match. So, I mean, you know, they're good. I think the problem is right now is the West, is everybody's beating everybody else. So you kind of still look at, you know, Hawaii's got a big week coming up. Long Beach is going to have to – and Irvine, it's a huge match coming up this week. The, you know, the week after there's going to be big matches. You know, come back as Long Beach gets SC and Pepperdine the week after at home. So I think the West being each other kind of keeps them all around the top 10. And Loyola and Ball State and people like that just on the outside.
All right, Robbie, give us what you're looking forward to this week.
I'm looking for the BYU at UC Santa Barbara twice this week on Thursday and Friday nights, just because UC Santa Barbara just hasn't quite unloaded on someone, and this would be a great statement weekend for them if they could take out BYU, assuming that Taylor Sander could make the trip and become academically or not violate team academic policy. So that I think those are the matches to watch this weekend.
Jay.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go with the BYU Santa Barbara, but I'm also going to look at Hawaii UCLA. I think those are two matches that are big time matches for both those teams to see if they're going to make it into the Final Eight. I'm also looking at Stanford Pepperdine because I want to see if Pepperdine is for real or if they just had a flash in the pan type situation. And I think. Stanford's a good team, but I think as we saw this past weekend, anybody's beatable on any given day, and that should encourage a lot of programs.
Mike.
I still like SC Stanford. I want to see because they're the teams before the season I thought would be in the finals, and I just kind of want to see what happens when the two play at SC and if Austin Zahn can make it back in the lineup or not.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Great job.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Have a great day.
You know, nobody else can talk about the men. We are.
Yeah, it's good to see you involved in the interview and, you know, perking up and getting excited about something out here, bud.
Hey.
Slam.
You want to talk about Shaq?
You like that, huh, Reed?
Yeah.
I'm not afraid to come after Reed today, too. I yelled at this earlier.
Let's go for it.
Still have our big guest coming up.
Who?
Shortly. Somebody.
Misty May Traynor, 2-time gold medalist. What is she up to? Her new book? What's the future?
Does she like Jeremy's pink shirt?
Always, without a doubt. Jeremy read the book first.
I did.
We should have her here in just a few minutes. But I wanted to...
What are the highlights? I didn't read the book. What are the highlights here before she comes on?
The candor of the highlights.
Yeah, the candor.
She
talks about alcoholism with her parents. She talks about a sexual assault that happened to her at Long Beach State that she, you know, nobody really knew except her family. She talked about relationship with Carrie, winning both golds, the injuries she's gone through, meeting Matt Trainer, all kinds of stuff. I mean, it was some good stuff.
Are they as close? Is she and Carrie as close as they seem?
You know, she talks about their relationship and how there'll always be love and respect and you know, the greatest team ever, but they are different on and off the court, and they've had to work through things just like everybody else. But at the end of the day, there was no better teammate. They handled losing differently, communicated differently, but over the years really learned from each other. It was a pretty cool spot there.
Yeah, definitely maintained some really good chemistry, obviously.
We'd be remiss if we didn't mention Zamps, our great sponsor, helping to bring this show to you. Orthosis for athletes. This is not only stuff when you get injured, but stuff to help you prevent being injured. Zamps.com. They have some great ankle support stuff. They're doing a lot of new stuff that incorporates plastics and neoprene. It's not quite an active ankle. It's not quite a body glove type thing. It's much, much better. They have lots of great stuff for your knees, backs, elbows, wrists, everything.
Go to the website.
Zamps.com.
Zamps.com. And you know, one thing about Misty real quick, Barney and Reed, is she was a great entertainer. In her first couple years on tour, you didn't really see that side of her. It was when she basically, after that gold medal going into 2005, you really started to see the personality of Misty May Trainor, her dancing coming out of the tunnel, I mean, those kind of things like that. She was great with the fans and great with the audience and great on center court.
She danced all over me.
Fantastic.
This year in Kansas City, I said, hey, Misty, you know, when we get introduced to go up and do a little dancing, boy, I look like a hat rack next to her. She's going crazy. One of the most awkward moments for me ever on stage.
Yeah, you're not a great dancer.
No, not my skills. Jumping, yes. Dancing, no.
All right, Net Live returns in just a few moments. Misty May Trainor, two-time gold medalist, when we come back. Misty May.
If I wrote you a symphony, just to say how much you mean to me,
what would you do?
If I told you you were beautiful, would you date me on the regular?
Would you?
Well, baby, I've been around the world, but I ain't seen myself another girl
like.
Still grooving along here in the loft. Been a good show so far. Lots of great discussion. Hugh McCutcheon discussion. That's one that's going to go on for a long time. But we do have our next guest coming up here in just a moment. If you want to call in and speak to our next guest, 347-677-1525 is the number, and we will endeavor to get you on the air to talk to one of the all-time greats in volleyball.
Jeremy, let's do this like only we know how to do, center court style.
DJ Khaled.
One of my favorite introductions that I do in the world is for this young woman right here. When she was in the womb, Barbara May, the Lord said this will be the greatest side-out player of all time, male or female. From Newport Harbor High School, where she played for Danny Glenn, on to Long Beach State University, where she was a 1998 national champion and an NCAA Women's Player of the Year, a three-time Olympian, 2000, 2004, and 2008, a two-time gold medalist for the United States of America, the four-time MVP, and the winningest female beach volleyball player of all time with 107 victories. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world, say hello to Misty May Trainor.
Hi. Hello, everybody.
God, Misty, I love hearing myself do that. Do you love it? Excuse me.
You couldn't see, but I was running down the street and dancing.
I knew you were dancing. You know, I was just talking about this with Jeremy, Kevin, and Reed, that we really started to see your personality come out in 2005, and I really miss the dances we used to do. It just seemed like you really enjoyed the crowd and just enjoyed the sport.
I mean, I enjoyed everything, and you guys made it easy, you know, working with great people that we had out on the beach. I mean, it makes it fun to show up every weekend, you know. So, and that's what you want from any sporting event. You want the people to see your personality and shine, and, you know.
Now, you know,
especially when you make it to your final, the finals, it's your time, you know.
Yes, and you did that quite a few times, actually. And, Misty, you are now on Twitter, at Misty May Trainer. Are you getting better
it took me a while. I'm still a little confused with that, but I'm working on it. Christy sat me down yesterday, kind of walked me through it. So I'm gonna try harder at that. But I have something. She also showed me video from Beijing with you dancing with the mascot. You're not bad.
See? No.
Everybody's got it in them, you know?
Yeah, there was this big, I don't even know what that thing was. He came out, and I just crushed him. I was doing full chest bumps with him. I tackled him, did a full break dance around him. I mean, it was just fantastic. Just all I would yell was, Jiayou, and the crowd would go crazy. It means, let's go, Chinese. But it was a lot of fun. We will get to Beijing in a minute. Let's talk about your camps, M2, where you're going, how the kids can find out about it. Give us a little background on what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, kind of how this started, I think every athlete needs a plan B. And, I mean, I think that goes for everybody in life, needs a plan B. Because you never know how long your career is going to last, what's going to happen, what happens with the sport, you know, and so on. And I've always had a passion for coaching, and I love interacting with people. I love working with kids. And, you know, I had a stint with Tom Peslacy at Irvine Valley Junior College, and I really like getting people to that next level and just teaching them our sport. And with Dancing with the Stars, when I hurt myself, you know, the Achilles injury, that can be a very tough one to come back from. And, you know, it made me think, like, okay, well, if I can't come back, what am I going to, you know, what will I do? And that's when I, you know, I had been thinking about going to school for my master's, and I'd been wanting to do clinics and just didn't know how to go about it. So what did I do? I enrolled myself in school. And actually talked to Christy Phillips, a friend of mine who I played club with, and she said, oh, you want to start clinics? Well, let's get it going, you know, and that's kind of how that whole thing started.
Yeah, now, is there a website that people can go to learn more about this?
So we have, my website is currently under construction. I'm revamping my main website, mistymay.com, to make it a lot more interactive and just bring more personality out and have fun with it. But we do have another website, mm2volleyball.com, which we put together for our clinics, M2 Volleyball Clinics.
Now, I want to throw this out there. You always have a job at Sport Check Volleyball Club, and I know you know that. Is there a future?
I saw your tweet about it, but I didn't know how to tweet back, you know?
Yeah, I'm well aware.
You can take over your 18.
Christy and I talked about your tweeting ability, so that's what I'm asking you right now. But
like, oh.
Is there
can't there just be one button you push, like, okay, this is it?
No, it can't be that. Yeah, I wish as well. Now, is there a future for you in indoor coaching, maybe at the college ranks?
Whenever there's a job opening. I would love to, and I'm in school for my master's at Concordia University for coaching and athletic administration, and I should be hopefully wrapping it up by this fall. But I do hope to get back indoor. I miss the indoor game, and I do hope to get back indoor again. To me, it's a different – obviously, it's different strategies, and just even though it's the same game, mentally it's a different game. So I'd like to get back indoor. The game has changed so much, though, since, you know, I left the indoor game. We didn't have liberos, and, you know, I think when I started the national team, libero came into effect, but now they can serve, and, you know, you can take things overhand, which we weren't really allowed to in college, and so this year I'm looking, I would like to, you know, possibly in the fall, volunteer assist somewhere to just get my bearings and kind of put that on my resume. But, you know, who knows? I would eventually like to land indoor.
Barney, how fired up would you be as a college coach if Misty May was your volunteer assistant?
Yeah, you just boss her around. Scout that match, Misty May.
Misty, I'm going to need you to get me a latte down the street and be here at 10 o'clock.
Perfect. I will do it.
Hey, listen, there were rumors back in 2008 that you were going to join the women's indoor team. How close was that really to happening?
I don't I don't know if that was really happening. The rumors, I think there's rumors flying all over the place. I hear things all the time, too, like I'm retiring, which I have no idea. That was news to me. But, no, I mean, indoor has always been something I never, it's like Dancing with the Stars. Like, it's been that one kind of void for me that I never got to finish, you know? And with the move out into Anaheim, could it have been a possibility? Sure. But it's, you know, I went in there and was an extra body for, you know, a couple practices. And it's tough. Once you go out to the beach, it's hard to get back indoor. But I do miss the game. And, you know, it would be a dream of mine to play. But, again, it's, you know, you really got to put a lot aside, sacrifice to get there.
Missy, take us back to the time when you were leaving the national team, because you came to the national team with a lot of fanfare. People thought you'd make a big splash, and it just didn't turn out that way. And talk about that decision period of leaving indoors to go back to the beach.
You know, it was tough. I do miss the indoor game, and this is where coaching keeps me in it. You know, sorry, the dogs are barking.
Boogie and Gruden, is that who your dogs are?
Boogie and Gruden, yes.
Are they well?
they want to be on the radio. No, it was one of those, it was a tough decision because, you know, for a lot of these athletes now, volleyball is year-round. And, you know, I came into the national team and, you know, I never felt like I really got the opportunity to show what I had. And then just kind of the fire started to dwindle, you know, double days and just never having a break. And it was a lot of things. And went to Pan American Games in 98 or 99. And Jen Pavley happened to be playing with Marcia Miller in the Pan American Games. And, you know, while we go to practice, I said, "What are you doing?" She's like, "Oh, we're going to movies." You know, and I was like, "Oh, the freedom." So it was one of those that my wheels started turning, and with volleyball, you know, being introduced to the Olympic Games in 96, I said, you know, I don't want the fire to burn out because I really love the sport, but I knew there had to be a change. Otherwise, I would, you know, end up just hating every day.
Now, Misty, moving forward to this summer, regardless of whatever happened with the AVP, were you going to take this summer off, or were you still going to play if there was a viable domestic tour?
I mean, it's hard to say because everything's up in the air. I would like to have a family, so family would be focus number one. But I'm, you know, working out, staying in shape to, you know, if there's tournaments, it don't conflict with clinics. And, you know, I'm going to stay in the best shape I can in order to allow myself to play, you know, when I want to, when and where.
Now, what about Matt? Where is he going to be playing this summer?
He'll be in Dallas. So Dallas is a perfect hub. I can get anywhere, a couple hours, anywhere, you know? But, I hope to see a schedule coming out soon of some, you know, local events and domestic events that, you know, I'd love to play in.
That gets me excited right there, Misty. I knew you weren't done yet.
Everybody's like, "You're retiring, my dad gets to retire." I'm like, "Who in the world? I'm not retiring people."
You know, that brings me to your book. Kevin and I have a copy. Jeremy was the first guy to ever buy it, by the way. Two-time Olympic gold medal
Thank
winner,
you.
Digging deep in volleyball and in life. And Kevin and I were on the phone last night talking about it. Such a great book. And I think what really we were most impressed was the candor that you had. I mean, you really shared your deepest feelings and emotions. So let's dive into the book. But first, what was it like for you to actually put this all out on the table, that experience of writing a book?
It gives me new appreciation for authors because the process takes a long time. But I want to say it was pretty therapeutic. And just like I said, it was time for me to share things with people that maybe they just didn't know. You know, I just don't want to be known as Misty the volleyball player. And I think everybody has a story. And when you want to share it, you know, it's time to share it with the world.
So that was a conscious decision then to make it an open narrative of your life, because so many of these celebrity books go by and it's really nothing more than sort of a rundown of what happened. Nothing really introspective from them, and I found your book.
Yeah, I didn't want it to be one of these other books, you know. And granted, there are some great books. Some aren't. I just didn't want it to go over the career and what I've accomplished on the court and, you know, a little off the court, because I feel like I have things that have happened in my life, and you guys have seen that in the book, that young kids can relate to, older, you know, adults can relate to and say, oh my gosh, she had this, or there were hurdles she had to jump over and she was able to do it. And, you know, I wanted to make it relatable for everybody,
you know,
because I think it can help some people.
Yeah, you kind of led me to my next thing. You know, you talk about sexual assault while you were at Long Beach State and going through that process and having to testify and charge somebody, and you were proud of yourself that you were able to go through with it. Since you wrote that book, have you had people come up to you and say, hey, this happened to me and I never said a word about it?
Not really, you know, but I've had a group come up that I'm going to now, you know, now that school's kind of winding down and everything and Matt knows where he is, I'm starting to reach out to different groups to be maybe a spokesperson or a, you know, come in and talk to different groups about different issues. So, but I, you know, it's hard because even with myself, I didn't tell a lot of people. So even if people read the book, probably wouldn't share it with too many, you know.
Yeah.
They wouldn't come up. But I've had different emails saying, wow, your book inspired me and, you know, a lot of different ways. And
Misty, one of the things you put in your book was that your motto is the best things in life are just things. How has that ideal manifested itself in your life with all the success you've had?
Oh, gosh.
I know.
I don't know.
It's all fun and games with Geeter, but now we're going a little deeper.
Yeah, we're going deep.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Things. It's just things. Like, I don't know. I can't explain it. Huh?
You have to give away your iPod if somebody asks for it.
Like, you know, I just... You have to put everything into perspective, and, you know, for me, I always knew things are kind of meaningless, but until something, like my mom, pretty much put everything in perspective. It's like, oh, crap, like, things could go tomorrow. It's like, if I didn't have a car, does it matter? No. You know, I'm still alive. I'm still healthy. It takes certain things to kind of put everything into perspective, and things are little, like even with volleyball, you know, it's so small in the whole scheme of things, but there's just so much more out there.
Now, you know, Misty, you know, for Jeremy and I, when you came on tour, you know, Barbara had already passed away, so we know Butch really well, but reading the book, I learned a lot about your mother and what you guys went through and how you were there every step of the way at the end and the letter you wrote to her, and just what a great figure she was in the sport of beach volleyball, but just personally for you, such an inspiration, and the way, you know, you put out the ashes in Greece and in Beijing, it was just a real cool thing, it seems, to take her on that journey with you.
Yeah, I mean, she's a big part. I wouldn't be doing what I am unless it wasn't for both her and my father. And, you know, my dad got to experience that with me. I wish you guys got to meet her. She would have brought a smile to your face every time, you know, she was around. And it's like, Matt, you know, he wishes he would have met her too. She's a very special person, very loved by everyone, and she would give you the shirt off her back, and she didn't care about how she looked, what little she had, because it was a matter of making other people feel good, giving to others, and just living.
You know, Misty, being a part of those streaks that you guys had, and if you think about it, incredible. 89 wins from 2003 to 2004, ended in Manhattan Beach to Jenny and Annette right before the Olympic Games. And then you won 108 in a row from 2007 through the Olympics in 2008. When you look back at that with Carey, did those numbers, are they just mind-boggling to you? Did you know those streaks were so important? What was going on during those things? Was the pressure getting heightened, or did you just keep going about your business every day?
I think for us, you know, we had to keep ourselves kind of protected, Carey and I, because for us it wasn't important. We just wanted to compete, and we wanted to win, and we wanted to do well, and we wanted to improve. You know, we had a much larger goal. But everybody around, you know, every time we'd show up at the tournament, they're like, oh, what number is this? And we're like, we have no idea. You know, we're here just we need to start our first match, you know, at 8 in the morning. So for us, I mean, we didn't look at the numbers until after they had ended, you know, the streak had ended. Then we sat back and we're like, wow, you know. And now, you know, looking at other sporting events and being able to watch different things on TV and, the tennis tournaments and seeing people's certain winning streaks in basketball and stuff, you're like, wow, we did something really amazing, you know.
Yeah, and one thing, Misty, you're listening to Misty May Trainer on the Net Live, that was so impressive, and I often talk to my teams about this, is the way you and Kerry would handle the early rounds. You know, Barney, these guys never lost before a quarterfinal in the history of the ABP. They always took care of business against the teams that they were supposed to beat business-like into, and I always thought that was a credit to them because it's really hard to do that.
That's what coaches always say, the absolute focus, and every time you go out that it's about that moment.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And you know, Misty, one thing people always ask me, and I know we were all talking about it before you came on and before we went on the radio, you know, your relationship with Kerry, and I think you're candid in the book. People always on the outside want to know, are they friends? Are they close? And I think you hit it perfectly when you said, we're different. We take winning differently. We take losing differently. We communicate differently. But at the end of the day, we love each other and we respect each other. Can you talk about Kerry?
No, most definitely. I mean, she's like a sister, you know, and I'm always going to support her, and I know that she's always going to support me. Do we hang off the court that much? No. But had I lived in the area, we live in two different areas. We have, you know, our family, we have different hobbies we like. There's, you know, we have different trainers. So, I mean, we saw each other all the time. We were on the road all the time. So it wasn't a matter of we needed the extra time off the court to spend together. And I think that's healthy, you know, for any relationship. But had I lived in Hermosa, I'm sure we would have hung out, you know, off the court more. But, yeah, most definitely. I mean, we are each other's biggest supporters. And, I mean, that's how it was the whole time. Sure, did we have our little disagreements, and I talk about it in one of the books? Sure. But did we squash it and go on, and did it only had to do with playing? It was like, whatever, you know?
Yeah, you know, Misty, I thought you were so candid about that, about the different camps that were trying to tear you guys apart. Even Butch at times saying maybe you should play with EY, that famous story of him telling Liz how to beat you guys. I thought that was really cool for you to share that. But at the end of the day, you and Kerry always seem to know what I think the rest of us thought. We're the best team. Why would we break that up?
Right, and I think, you know, that has a lot to do. I think going back to the winning streak and stuff is, when people aren't in your shoes, they don't realize. So when things start to go wrong, or, you know, we lost one match or we lost a game, it's like the end of the world to everybody else, and how can we fix this? As opposed to, no, we've worked, you know, Kerry and I, our first year together, won one tournament. And what did we do? We worked hard, and you learn from your mistakes, and you learn from losing, and you take things and as they go. And to just quickly change, it doesn't do anybody any good. You have to work through, you know, your mistakes. So I think everybody else was freaking out, and me and Kerry were like, okay, we're the eye of the hurricane. We're just calm, you know?
Yeah, lose one match. Time to step on the panic button.
Exactly.
Scratch my head on that one.
We've talked a lot of juniors here on the show today, and I love the way you open Chapter 5 of your book. I'm going to read a section of it here. It says, I am a huge proponent of kids playing multiple sports. I don't believe in specialization, which is the way of the world these days. It leads to burnout, tunnel vision, and narrow-mindedness. It overworks muscles. It minimizes friendships. I believe kids should be well-rounded physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. I am a good example of the theory that participating in lots of activities can produce an outstanding young athlete and a whole person. And I love that paragraph, because so much pressure is placed on young athletes today. And my question would be, how can a young volleyball athlete manage the demands of coaches, friends, parents, and schools to continue to get that diverse sporting experience you're promoting?
I know. It is really tough. And that's why I'm a big advocate at my clinics. I said, you know, I talked to the parents, and at the end I said, play as many sports as you can. Be a kid, because, you know, even though volleyball now may be exciting, they may not like it. Maybe they like some other thing, and unless they're trying different sports, they don't know. But I also, I mean, I don't like when kids specialize, but I think the big thing that has come in is it's all about winning, and it's the money that, you know, people are threatened now. You can't play for this, can't play for our high school team unless you play for this certain club, or you can't do this. And you know what I tell some of the young girls, and I hate to say this because obviously I'm in a different position, was that for volleyball scholarship, necessarily from looking at it from my point of view, you don't need to play high school. High school is more of a, I would say, more social and to have fun and to play, but more of the colleges look at you through club. I don't know, Peter, if that's, you know, that's how I
yep.
perceive it. And, you know, you just, I get a lot of kids that are like, well, you know, I can't play for my high school unless I do this, and they want me to play all year round. They won't let me do track. And I just tell it, you know, do what you want. At the end of the day, if you're a good athlete and you work hard, they're going to, colleges are going to want you. Somebody's going to want you, you know?
Is this something that you and Matt spent some time talking about? Because it seems like the baseball community is one of the chief offenders when it comes to grinding kids from the age of 10, as though everyone's going to the show at 18. Is this something that you have both talked about in relation to both of your sports?
Yeah, you know, a little bit. And baseball is different. I, you know, talking to Matt, he had to decide the early, like, I think his freshman or sophomore year at Mater Dei, like, to choose between baseball or football. And he chose baseball. And luckily enough for me, I get to play soccer and do track. And to me, it's really sad because I would love to see, like, I just did a discussion about this on my discussion board. But I would love to see if there was any studies about, one, you know, I'd never seen so many girls or athletes getting surgery at such an early age, one. And then two is I feel that by playing multiple sports, the level of problem solving, learning about different angles, being able to, have a more, like, being able to anticipate, make changes faster, I think only improves when you're playing multiple sports. And so I'd love to see athletes, like when we were growing up, the athletes playing, let's say, 10 different sports, how they would do against athletes now that only play one single sport but being thrown into 10 different sports.
Yeah, you make a great point.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
to see if they can adjust, you know, and to see if they can take everything in consideration and do well at that particular sport.
The book is called Misty, Digging Deep in Volleyball and Life. Misty May Trainer joining us on the net live. And I know Jay Roche and myself very excited about your tweet that mentioned Jay Roche and Geeter and just completely forgot about Reed and Barnett. We just wanted you to know that was really a great moment in Twitter history.
You know, the other guys.
I don't want to throw my compadre under the bus, but I am learning. Okay. I will tweet after this.
Thanks, thanks a lot, that. Christy.
How much?
I will tweet after this. I will tweet after this, and I will leave Geeter and DJ Rush out of this.
Do not leave us out. By the way,
I'm kidding.
You can ask Jeremy. Jeremy will vouch for this. When the book first came out, and he had it, and we were on a plane together, I looked through all 296 pages and finally found my name on page 259. It's very important to me.
And that's all you did. Book, yeah. And you flip to find your name.
Yeah. And you know what, Missy? Thank you.
Find your name
for putting me in there. But I love that chapter, not because I'm in it, by the way, but because I was there. The second Olympic gold medal chapter, Missy. Let's talk about your third trip to the Olympics, your second gold medal, Beijing. I really enjoyed that chapter because you let us in so much of what was going on in your mindset at that time. I noticed it from being there. You just seemed to enjoy that Olympics. I remember you going down the bobsled on the Great Wall. Talk about that approach, which was your third time around, and maybe the pressure you didn't feel because you seemed very loose at that Olympics.
I think out of all the Olympics, that was the one that actually Carrie and I felt the most pressure out of the two Olympics. Was definitely in Beijing because the teams we were coming up against, granted, Juliana was hurt, but, you know, you have Larissa playing with Anna Paula, who was a good player. We didn't know how that team was going to be. And we had lost to the Chinese, you know, before. So there was more pressure on us that Olympics. But I went in because when I played with Holly, we had such a limited amount of time to qualify. The blinders were on. And we stayed down by the venue, went to opening ceremonies, but didn't really get to take in the essence of the Olympic Games because it was so focused on playing. And that was the same thing for 2004 because we wanted that medal. We worked so hard. We had one goal in mind, and we wanted to do that. After getting the medal in Athens, you know, I felt at ease as if something were to happen, I'm okay because I've accomplished everything I wanted to do. The second one obviously was a goal of ours. But for me, I wanted to go in and really experience the games and play and participate as opposed to just participating and playing. Because the Olympic Games are such a special time that things happen. You don't know if you'll go back. You don't know if you'll have that same opportunity again. And it just helped because we had been there before. It really did take the pressure off because we had been exposed to everything.
And
four
you know,
years earlier that...
Yeah, sorry,
I had a great time. I had a wonderful time.
Yeah, I liked reading about the gold medal match because I remember waking up and looking out the window and just if you guys could imagine just a dark sky, pouring rain, monsoon. You know, I'm thinking Kurt Russell and Robin Williams in Best of Times. I mean, it was a crazy scenario, and I was thinking to myself, the last time they lost was to this Chinese team over a year ago.
In the rain.
In the rain. So I was kind of freaked out, but reading the book, you said there was no better way to do it. You and Kerry both thought, this is great. We're going into the jungle. We're going into battle. And I'll never forget the focus you guys had in that match. Take us through that morning. There's also a great story about Butch texting you saying, no matter what, we love you. Share that moment with us.
Well, you know, it's I have to just throw this in there, too. We knew it was raining. Why we picked white suits, we really don't
I
know.
In there. That went right through my head, and I thought,
I
you know.
I really don't know, you know, but hey, it worked, you know.
on many levels.
But, no, it was one of those that Carrie and I, and this is something you learn by being together through experience. And, I mean, we've played in so many different, like, different regions of the world that we've played in snow. I mean, the 1 year on the AVP tour in Tahoe, it was snowing. Could we easily wake up and say, wow, it's really cold outside. Oh, we don't feel like playing and it's going to snow. And, you know, right there when you wake up and say, oh, no, it's raining, and your energy level goes down, your mindset goes down, instead of, how about we wake up, it's raining, great, this is a great day to do it, you know, this is awesome, because your mind is a powerful, powerful tool, it's powerful. And so we woke up and we're like, you know what, this is our time. And every time we left the, every time we leave the hotel room at a tournament, we'd say, yep, we're going to come back and say we won, you know, we're winning. So we were already preparing before we left. We had a great meeting with Troy. I was a little nervous, but I have the same routine. I listen to the same music, kind of to get my mind right. And my dad did text me and say, you know, no matter what happens. And I think he realized the pressure we had on us, but knew that we could do it. Knew that we could do it, but just wanted me to know, you know, that, that no matter where anybody was, they were right there with Carrie and I.
That's very cool. Now, how much scouting did you guys do? Was Troy Tan, was that mostly his job, or was he, you know?
We put Troy to work. We put Troy to work. No. The, you know, it was a lot different. This Greece, we played everything at night. China, we played everything in the morning. So we had the whole rest of the day off. So what we did, Troy wanted us to go back and rest. He took it over, put out game plans, and he made it really simple.
Gotcha. Very cool.
Misty, you said you set out to become the Karch Karai of female volleyball players. Have you accomplished that goal?
You know what? I really haven't looked at it like that. I go out and I just like inspiring people. But I really, like, when we were trying to name the book, everybody's like, throwing things around. I said, what about chasing a legend? Because to me, Karch Karai, the legend, and to everybody else, you know, one of the greatest. Sinjin and Randy, Carrie and I were after their record, you know. We had them in our eyesight. But, you know, Karch has done things in the sport that nobody has. And, I mean, just to be the type of player and be compared to a player of his caliber, but also a person. He's a great person off the court. I mean, that's all you can ask for.
You know, I was doing a video blog for the Dig Show back then when we were in Beijing, and I had that little video camera, And I went up to Karch right after the gold match, and we were all waiting around with the families and everything, waiting to see you guys after media. And I'm like, Karch, and he was emotional. And he looked in and he said, Kerry and Misty are the greatest male or female beach volleyball team of all time. And we put that on the show, and it played on the video boards at tournaments. But to me, I'll never forget that. And I've asked Kerry about that because she's seen it. She said that that was just one of the greatest things she'd ever heard. It really hit her that, wait, you know, that Karch is saying that about me and Misty. Very cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's an honor. He actually did it. Remember, he got me, I don't know if you were there, but he did get me coffee, too, at the Olympics. Like, can you get me a latte? He went into the NBC area, got me a latte. But no, to have a player of that caliber, it's amazing. I mean, Matt would feel the same way. It's like a Hall of Famer, you know, somebody saying, you know, Matt, you know, something about Matt. It blows you away, and you just think about, what did I do to get here? And, you know, how can I encourage others to do the same?
Misty, with the collapse of the AVP last year and the disarray that we're seeing so far this year, what do you think the future of beach volleyball is in the United States?
I personally think it's in a very, very tight position. Do I think it can bounce back? Yes. But it's like the world as we see it now. Everybody's got to band together, and, you know, you got to give and take, and to get it back on its feet. We do have a strong support, but I mean, I get fans writing every day, like, is there a tour? What about the AVP? And, you know, the fans are still there, but it's building the brand again, you know, from the ground up again. And I think it definitely can happen. It's just, you know, it's sad because I love the sport so much, yeah. And to see all the craziness, but at the same time, I kind of step away, it would drive me crazy. It would drive me crazy. But I, you know, I do hope that it can bounce back. And I know there's been talks about different tours and different things. And I think just it's going to take everybody banding together. And, you know, if you have to give for a while, that's what you have to do, you know, to get the sport back.
Yeah, there's a meeting tomorrow, I know, today with a lot of the beach players and talking about the National Volleyball League. And hopefully we can see Misty May Trainer out there at one of the local events. That would be fantastic. And by the way, Misty, you know, you talked about coaching. I did get two texts from Jared Elliott and from Tim Jensen at Pepperdine in Texas. You have a volunteer assistant waiting for you whenever you want. You just show up.
I have, you know, the sad thing though is now I gave awards at the ABCA. I think you have to, like, do they give stilts when you get these coaching positions? Like, you have to buy stilts. So, like, even, like, look at the players in the eyes.
Yeah. Misty, tell people where they can pick up your book. Misty, Digging Deep in Volleyball and Life.
Well, they'll be on my website. They can log on to Amazon. And I believe they can go to Barnes & Noble and Borders, any bookstore, and pick it up.
It's a great read. You'll learn a ton about Misty. You'll learn a ton about her views of life, not just one of those glossed over autobiographies.
You know,
really a good book.
I always said Barney, and J. Rowe was a part of this too as a DJ, but it was always an honor to be a part of watching the greatest team of all time. I don't know what my record was. I tried to figure it out. One time it was like 733 or something with Misty on center court. It was just ridiculous.
I like how you co-opted her efforts into your record.
I'm just telling you, it was amazing to be a part.
No, it's perfect.
Yeah, she knows. She knows that.
He always got the crowd going, the energy. I miss that right now, like the energy.
And I miss us. But I'll tell you, in Beijing, it was really just, you just felt like you were there watching the greatness of it all. And to be just a small part of that and to watch it was incredible.
I still haven't sat down and watched the finals.
Misty, you're allowed to do that now.
When
are we going to do that?
I don't know. I lived it. I don't. I gotta have a viewing party, I guess.
Misty May Trainer. So. A two-time gold medalist and all-around great person. One of the very first guests ever on this program, as a matter of fact.
Will you come back on in a couple months?
Whenever you want, I'm here.
Don't say that.
I'm around. Just tweet now that I know. Just tweet. We need you now. Okay, I'll put my cape on and I will be there.
Hey,
say hi to Matt for us, by the way.
I will. Hopefully, I don't know if you guys make it up to spring training, but hit us up if you go and always have a place to stay.
Hey, and don't let those Yankee fans pour beer on you when you're smashing them down.
Yeah.
In the ALCS.
Oh, I didn't. You know, You know, I didn't. I just put my hood on. But, it's, you know, what do you expect? It's
Yankee fan.
What happens when you go to different events?
I love it.
Misty May, thank you so much for spending
your
time with us.
No problem. All right, thank you guys. Have a good day.
All right, see you later.
All right, bye-bye.
That did not suck.
That did not feel like 40 minutes, by the way.
40 minutes.
Boom, gone.
I just love how candid she is and how honest she is. And
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, to watch her grow into this great personality that she had always had, but, you know, first couple years just really was real professional. And then to see her dancing on center court and, you know, dominating. Remember her dominating the awards banquets?
Yes, yeah. I mean, she...
Jeremy was looking from across the room longingly.
Yes. Gazing. She would do the hammer dance when you would introduce her sometimes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, she was just classic like that, and really, but you still, you know what you appreciate is that she still loves the game, you know what I mean, and wants to see it thrive and wants to be a part of it, and she's going to be a coach. That you just know. You can just sense it when you talk to her.
You know, we talked about the candor so many times in the book, but one of the big things, she touched on it too, is that the Olympics and that 2 weeks or that one broadcast or two broadcasts for some of these Olympians, that doesn't tell the whole story. People see that. They see Misty Carey, the icons,
yep,
the success, the 108 wins, the streak, all that stuff. They see that, but they don't really know the person. And you, yep, read this book and you get to know the person, and it's not always great stuff that gets you there. It's not this rapid rise of ascension straight up. There's bumps along the way, downs, ups, and eventually they climb the mountain.
When you're the greatest team of all time, think about the pressure that is. They carried the AVP for many years in terms,
absolutely,
of having to be the faces of the tour and the media and all that stuff, along with people like Holly and Lambeau for a short period. People like that really had to be at the forefront, Todd and Phil. And no one did it more or better than Carey and Misty. Elaine Youngs, these people that were at the top of our sport, had to do a lot for our sport. And I think Misty and Carey, you know, when you read this book, you realize, yeah, they're ups and downs. There's the pressure. There's the people in camp trying to break you guys up. There's when you lose, it's the end of the world. For them to stay together for that long period of time and to let the journey and the process happen. That's what we're always preaching as coaches. You're going to lose. Well, how are you going to be after that loss? How are you going to bounce back after that loss? How are we going to be through adversity? What makes us the greatest of all time? How we got through that adversity. People don't let that process happen. Kids don't let it happen right now. They want to jump ship. These guys didn't jump ship. I remember in 2006 when they almost broke up. I remember them in a car in Boulder, Colorado, talking it out. And I remember it was at that conversation that they had, because I remember Casey and I were in the other room waiting for them to get out of that car because I was hanging out with Casey. Carey came in and said, we are sticking it out. We are going through to Beijing. We are going to win gold. Those two said, this is our team. Let's put everyone, dads, moms, everybody aside, coaches. We're going to talk this out. We're together. Let's do this. Are they the best of friends? Everyone wants. Do you guys hang out every day?
No,
absolutely not. But they like she said, she's a sister.
Hey, you tell kids, you don't have to be friends with all of your teammates, but you have to respect what they can do. And I'll tell you what I really respected about Misty and Carey was that they got it done the second time when the expectations were so high.
Yep,
they got it done. Do it once is remarkable, absolutely. But you can just do it once, right? You can have a great 2 weeks. You can have a great 1 week. We've seen teams do that. They weren't great before. They weren't great after. But for those 2 weeks, they captured it. Misty and Carey were great in 2004. They rolled it through 2008, up and down with the problems you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But then they arrived in 08, and they delivered on all those promises.
Undefeated in sets in two Olympic Games.
Yeah. Absolutely remarkable.
We should go to break and come back with final thoughts?
Final thoughts. Got another thought on the beach here.
Ooh, I can't wait.
We got some thoughts on the beach.
All right.
Misty, touch on it a bit. We'll be right back. We've got a few minutes left on this program. We've got more meat on the bone. The Net Live. You like that, Reed? A little more pep.
There you go.
You happy?
I like it.
It was that pep.
I'm happy. Song. That was great. That was great radio. Good job.
Right back. The Net Live. Rock in the Darkness on the Net Live. Where did these guys go, DJ? Huh, Junior?
Wherever they're from. Who knows? I mean,
you're Junior now on the show. You know that, right?
That's fine.
Emails and everything.
JR, that's
yeah.
fine.
Yeah, Junior. These guys just disappeared. They were the biggest thing. Performed at the Grammys. Hitting it out of the park, looking like something out of the 70s reject. Unbelievable. Hey, more thoughts on Misty.
Can we get Reed's thoughts, too? Cause
yeah, sure.
He's here, right?
I think so. I haven't looked at the screen recently.
No, that was great. That was great. You know, Misty is so down to earth. And I really like her desire. I think it's a human desire, the desire to be known. And that she put herself out there and said, you know, a lot of people are seeing me compete, and I'm more than just what you see on the court. And I can appreciate that.
She mentioned 1998 when she left the indoor game and how her passion had kind of been drained. That was the time for the women's team when they were just grinding people. Mick Haley was
I was actually there for that, too. I was at that Pan Am Games, and I remember her actually being in my room. There was maybe, I don't know, six or seven of us, and I brought a guitar on that trip, and we were just going around singing the blues. And I don't remember exactly what she said, but it was something about indoor and being done.
Yeah. They were just killing people. They were in the gym 6 hours a day. I couldn't believe it, what was going on with that team. And those girls were just emotionally wrecked. And it's hard to play well when you're that way. And the men's team has gone through not quite that, but similar type situations. And we've seen some coaches come in and change that. I think we're at an interesting point in the national teams where people realize less is more in many cases. And it certainly wasn't in 1998. More was just more.
Yeah, we definitely, I think we're going to want people to download the podcast because, you know, that was 40 minutes with Misty and her being candid and talking about the book and just talking about life, and you see that personality. And one thing that always drove me crazy, guys, was after they won in 2004 and 2008 and they went on Leno and they went on Ellen and you go on Oprah and they only get a couple minutes and it's all about the bathing suits they were wearing and them
right.
hugging each other after
right.
win. There's never any substance to the interviews. Like, who are these gals and why are they important, and think about what they're doing traveling, you know, for Carrie, she's now a mother of two, and Misty's doing camps for kids, and they're the best to ever play this game. So
it takes 40 minutes. It takes,
you know,
40 minutes to do that. You can't do that in 5 minutes, which is,
yeah, you can talk about shows. Something besides the bathing suits.
Agreed. Oh, they should start with,
I mean, that. Leno just didn't do any prep. I've never watched him since. Carrie's interview she ever had.
Really?
Yeah,
I'll have to look that one up. Hey, I wanted to get into this for just a couple of minutes before we're out. Is the NVL real? Is the USA Volleyball Tour real? Is the beach actually going to happen on any measurable level this summer?
I think there's going to be Corona wide open. I think Billy will have 6 tournaments.
Is that a measurable level?
$50,000. I think the NVL will happen. I think they're going to have 6 tournaments. I think they're trying to do a triple crown where 3 of the tournaments are $150,000 each. We'll know more tomorrow because they're having a meeting. I believe they're funded, and I believe they're announcing some new sponsors tomorrow. So I'm excited about that. USAV, I hear, is happening, but I don't know anything because I haven't talked to Dave in a while, and I really don't have much on them. So I need to get back on that and figure that one out because, you know, I think if USAV adds 4, then all of a sudden you have some things to choose from.
But even if it's 4, okay, $50,000. $50,000 over 30 teams?
It's something.
40 teams?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not doing jumping jacks about
something,
it.
Something is not much. I just keep getting back to, we've talked to all the people involved here, James Lights, Albert Hanneman, who am I leaving out here?
Dave Williams.
Williams, thank you. It just doesn't seem to me that there are enough answers. Maybe there'll be answers when you go to this meeting. I hope there are. I hope the NVL is truly fully funded, whatever that means. But I still continue to wonder, is beach really a business? For the players is kind of that question. I mean, for whom is the question there? I'm sure there are going to be people making money, but that's what I wonder. Is it a business?
I think that's what they need to figure out. You know, I mean, stop talking about models and how great it is, and let's just see what works.
Well, that's a good point, because I don't want beach to fail. I'm not anti-beach, but I continue to wonder.
If you worry, you're off the show.
Well, yeah. I continue to wonder if it really is a viable entity.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, people care in the Olympics, obviously. Great. You care in the Olympics. I keep hearing there shouldn't be investors seeking a return. What do you mean there shouldn't be investors seeking a return? Why are people
getting
involved?
Who's your number one source? Dan Madden?
I've talked to Dan Mann.
Okay.
But we haven't seen anything concrete. Every time we ask the question about the money, the real money, the $150K per tournament in prize money, which is a lot of scratch, we don't really get a clear answer. I don't really need to see a bank statement, but I need a clear answer as to, yes, we have these sponsors. They're putting up the money. You don't hear that. And that's what I'm worried about.
Definitely a concern.
I'm worried about when we get Hans Stolfus in here and he starts telling me about, oh, there can't be an investor seeking a return. It has to just be about the players and this and that. I go, you know what? That's an Anschutz situation. That's you want somebody to make a conscious decision. Oh, I have too much money. I should just give this to some beach volleyball players to let them play volleyball. That is not the way a sport can be built.
I'm not so sure that's what Hans meant, because I kind of sided with him on that note, was that it's not so much that somebody's investing and not getting a return. It's that their return is built into the company. And, of course, you know, I spike balls and I pass balls. I'm not a business person. But it really seems like when there's a burden to pay out investors versus them just getting money from an executive level and it just running like a sponsor and marketing ad machine, that seems to put less pressure on the people putting the money in and the overall business.
Okay.
Was that a walk-off right there?
Yeah.
Or did I just make no sense?
No, you make sense.
You make sense.
No, you make action. No, of course you make sense. But Barney and I are looking at each other like, who's going to go now? I just feel like these, you know, we keep talking about the same things over and over again. And I know I was reading some notes from you, Barney, earlier about the positivity. It was kind of bothering you that there's so much positivity. I don't think we have any other choice.
But positivity about what? I mean, I think Misty hit it a little bit. That nobody knows, and everybody talks about it's great, but it's sad that it's kind of flailing. The whole thing's flailing, and that you don't hear that from anybody. Obviously, you can't say that if you're promoting a tour, I guess. To your point, you can't say that. But I'm tired of the "we're so great" crap. Enough. It's crap twice in the show, by the way, Jeremy.
Beep.
I'm just tired of that because you're not. I'm sorry, your tour collapsed. And nobody knows what the hell is happening, and there's 2 months to go till summer, 3 months to go till summer around here. That's it. It's not great. Okay, people care in the Olympics. That's once every 4 years. You got to figure out how to make it a business. Otherwise, somebody has to figure out how to make it a business. Smarter guy than me has to figure out how to make this a business and make this have volleyball in the collective mind of everyone. I keep hearing, oh, beach is still attractive and the advertisers like us and there's no problem with the model. Well, if that were true, there would be a 2011 season. There would be no doubt we would have a tour. The reason we have no idea what's happening is because there aren't enough advertisers and people don't believe the product is good, so fix it. Change it. Don't come on the program and tell me it's the same thing. All right? I mean, things are not okay. That's what I hear from so many of the folks we talk to, is that, oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. You know, it's not. It didn't collapse because of Nick Lewin, much as I would like to blame him for everything.
Yeah.
He's an idiot. So what? That's not the biggest problem with the sport. The biggest problem is it's not making enough money to support the players, to support the executives, to support you and DJ. You know?
DJ Rowe.
You and Junior need a job.
Well, I remember Reed coming on and talking about, this is right around when things were going down, and you'd been to the U.S. Open down there at Huntington, just, what, 100,000 people and... You know, Hurley, part of Nike now, and just how they've been able to capture what their lifestyle is all about and sell it.
I DJed that event, too.
They sell product.
Big deal.
They sell product.
Yeah, that's the difference, is that that's a loss. I talked to Pat O'Connell, and we're going to have him actually on the show, if you guys remember him. Famous surfer on Endless Summer 2.
Yeah.
And he's great, man. He's the head of sports marketing at Hurley now. And he puts on that event. They put on two events on the West Coast in the fall, the other one being the Trestles event. And, you know, he was telling me that it's not so much – it's actually a loss. That actual event is a loss, but I think they're taking a lot from the back end in terms of selling product. And so if – I don't know, maybe Aaron Wachvogel's line can be the back end. But if we can build some product and some industry around volleyball – we might have something.
Well, more discussion on that later here on our show. I think that's going to do it for another awesome episode.
Next week, we will get Albert Hanneman on this show, and we will ask him those questions.
Good. Because
they're
going to
have
I
that meeting tomorrow, and there will be some good news.
That's what I want. I want good news. We're working on Hugh. We're going to effort to get
Reed
him.
One gold for Hugh. Hugh is coming on the show.
Jamie Moore.
I have personally talked to Hugh, and he will be on. Just
next week?
I'm just going to wait this one out.
Oh, next week.
Not going to put myself on the line for next week, but it's going to be at the right time.
You know, Reed, people are asking me about John Cook. We do need to get Cooker on here. I'm not
He's
sure.
Coming.
Okay.
I got him. Next week, I think it
next
is.
Next week?
Yep, I got to go back and check my email. But I have
Monday, I'll be in Vegas.
I may be there. We'll see.
Oh, God.
Let's do the show from Vegas, you guys. You guys can set up shop at my house. I got an internet connection there. Let's do it.
Pay attention. We may have a show Monday. We may have a show Tuesday. It'll be out there on the Net Live on Facebook.
Okay.
And we'll...
Big thanks to Zamps.
Huge thanks to Zamps. And Josh Glazebrook for doing our...
John Tawa, Oja.
Josh Glazebrook. Glazebrook.
Yeah, Jay.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, Josh Glazebrook does a lot of graphic arts for us. Good stuff. And Zamps for supporting the show. Lori Okamura. Good stuff. We're pushing it forward.
Yeah, we especially appreciate Jay and Robbie and Mike taking time every week to do the college update. And Misty May Trainer for 40 minutes of her time.
Man.
Thank you, Ojan and JT. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about juniors volleyball.
What's that worth? 40 minutes at Misty May's rate. What do you think?
Like 35 grand.
Hey, I got a closing question here.
Uh-oh.
Is it the Blake Show or the Lake Show?
Ooh. Still the Lake Show. They just lost 6 of 7. They're awful. But, yes, he is very exciting. He does have L.A. buzzing and the rest of the country. People show up to the games to watch him, but it's still the Lake Show. Jeremy, go.
Most exciting player in the NBA.
Griffin. Right up there. Absolutely.
Who's
absolutely.
More exciting?
Don't look at me with those evil eyes.
I'm not
disagreeing with you. You bother me
making
today.
Sure.
Dude, I love it. That was 2 hours and 27 minutes of volleyball before we ever got to anything else.
That's
the sport going forward.
I like Reed's questions. I like that, Reed.
Hey, more 7 and 7 for Reed.
You get Reed early again. I like when he doesn't have practice and stuff. I like when he's focused on the show.
For Dieter and Junior, I'm Kevin. We'll see you again soon. The Net Live. Be good.
Bye, Angry Kevin.